Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key, or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright, I feel alright tonight. Alright, I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and
angels. All right, all right, all right. Hey, good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago on a chilly, chilly night. We're here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows this show with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday.
You made two for Tuesday.
So get your requested now. One artist, two songs. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's also the number to call for talk or text. Coming up on the show after the 1:30 news, we will be joined in studio by Gerald Gray, who is refurbishing the Avalon Regal Theater, a big, beautiful theater. Also joining us on the phone will be April Wright. She is the director of Going Attractions, the definitive story of movie palaces, which is being screened tonight at 7 o'clock at the Music Box Theater, a terrific documentary about the old, beautiful movie palaces around the country that used to be it's just so beautiful. And you know, we have a ton of them downtown in the Loop here. And in other neighborhoods, but yeah, and Chicago's featured pretty well in the movie as well. But it's a really terrific movie. If you love the old movie palaces and you miss them, and you just want to revel in it, you should check out this movie. And it's going to be screened at the Music Box Theater, which is a movie palace in and of itself. And it's tonight at 7 o'clock. Going Attractions: The Definitive Story of Movie Palaces. April Wright, the director, is going to join us. She will be in attendance at that screening for a big Q&A afterwards. So that's going to be cool. That'll be coming up after 1 o'clock. Also, today is Neil Young's birthday, one of my favorite artists ever. So we're going to talk a little bit about Neil Young and his best albums and all that cool stuff. Christmas music has begun, so we're going to talk about the worst Christmas songs of all time. Listen to a little bit of those. And then the worst menu items at every chain restaurant that you can imagine. We're going to jump into that topic as well. And it's Two for Tuesday, like I said. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is updated all the time and interactive. It's a great way to stay connected. So like us right now. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So give us a like. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So that's coming up. All that stuff is coming up here on the show. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you, buddy?
I'm great, Nick. How are you doing, man?
I'm all right.
Good.
I'm all right. Very excited to have April Wright on. The movie is really good.
Yeah, I can't believe all these things. I just never really got to know, you know. But in the film, she really makes me feel like I was there.
Well, it's also a great piece of history because it goes before the movie palaces even and up until today. That was just, you know, like I said, I've said this, you know, many, many times before. I grew up going to those theaters in the Loop, the big movie palaces. Now in the 70s, they weren't in great shape.
No.
They weren't. They had some, you know, rodent infestation problems, and they were in disrepair. But it was still, you could see the beauty when you walk into these places, even if it was in disrepair. You could just look in some of these lobbies that you would walk into, and the bathrooms and the lounges and downstairs that you would go to, even though in the 70s they weren't in great shape, you knew you could feel the history when you walked into those theaters.
Absolutely. And I live down the street from the Uptown.
Yeah.
And I've been praying for that project to come to fruition.
That is a gorgeous theater.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because they showed, when they first announced that they were going to be fixing it up, they showed some of the photos of the inside, and I was blown away that a place like this would be allowed to fall into such disrepair. But things happen.
Yeah.
You know, businesses fall in hard times. But let's hope that things can turn around quickly.
Yeah, I agree. It's just a gorgeous theater. So anyway, we'll talk more about the Uptown, which, by the way, is featured in the movie. Gerald is the guy who runs the Avalon Regal Theater, and they are trying to get that theater up and running again and refurbishing it. And Kanye West just said that he would donate $1 million to help get that theater back up and running again. So big movie palaces. That's what we're going to be celebrating in just a little bit. So all right, let's get into the newsroom. It's Vic Vaughn. Welcome back, my friend.
Morning, sir. Thank you.
How are you feeling?
Very good.
Good. Good. We missed you, buddy.
Yeah, I was just thinking, last time I was at work was Thursday night.
Yeah.
And yesterday, last night, I couldn't wait to get to work. So I think that's a good sign.
It is a good sign.
I found the right job for me because I really was excited to get back to work.
It's. I know there are a lot of people who are listening right now who have jobs that they hate, and I'm sorry to say this, but I love my job. I love this job.
Yeah.
I look forward to coming in here every single night. And talking with the listeners and just having some fun on the radio and giving people 4 hours of kind of fun entertainment, you know,
for
the overnight hours. I just have a great time.
It's fun.
But I'm glad you're back.
Thank you again, sir.
And
appreciate it.
Boy, make sure you... Are you going to walk back home?
Yeah, I only walk across the park and I'm home. But Jeannie told me last night, take your earmuffs. I said, I'm not going to need those.
Oh.
I'm glad I brought them because my forehead was... I was in pain by the time I got here. It was just across the park.
No, I know. I mean,
I'm sure another block it would have been numb.
It's even going to be colder when you leave here. So
it is.
You know, if you need to jump in a cab, you should do that.
I can't believe it's this cold on November 12th.
It's so crazy, man. And then it's going to be like 45 by Saturday.
You know, Tom Skilling said he's a pretty good guesser, and he said last night that this may be a sign of what we can expect this winter is the really, really cold and then kind of moderate temperatures, and then bam, cold again the next week. So,
well,
ain't that just the way?
That's great. That's fantastic. Yeah, and I got a little scratch in my throat because of this weather now.
Yeah, that'll feel better by May.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, anyway, welcome back, Vic. Vic is in the newsroom. Tom is producing, and I am your host. And it's going to be cold for the next couple of days, so just stay warm out there, everybody. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you wanted to join us and if you want to get your 2 for Tuesday requests in as well. We'll take a little break, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people have seen the footage from Jeopardy that happened. Was it yesterday?
Yeah, this was during the Tournament of Champions, I believe.
Okay, and we have the audio of it, and it's it involves what a contestant did for Alex Trebek, who, as we know, is in treatment for stage 4 pancreatic cancer. It's actually pretty special. So we'll talk a little bit about that and when we come back. All right. 312-981-7200. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline Studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. You know, we was talking to Vic. Vic's away from his mic. He's at his desk right now working. Vic had a birthday over the weekend.
That he did, yeah.
So I wanted to wish him a happy birthday. And I'll wish it to him later because he's working right now. He's writing his newscast for 1:30. But anyway, he had a birthday, so happy birthday to Vic. And also, Vic is a veteran, and I wanted to thank him for his service too. So, two great things about Vic. Happy birthday, and thank you for your service, my friend, and welcome back. So, all right. So, you heard the Jeopardy theme, which, of course, makes me immediately feel stupid. at Simon's, they turn off the jukebox. I don't know if they do this anymore because I haven't been there in years. It's been a bunch of years since I've been there, but... So at 3:30 Jeopardy's on, right?
Yeah, 3:30.
Okay, so they turn off the jukebox every weekday at 3:30, and they turn up the volume, and everybody watches Jeopardy and plays along in the bar, all the regulars, all the daytime regulars. And then they even bet on it, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I think they bet on Final Jeopardy. So it's Jeopardy. People love Jeopardy. I mean, I love it, but I'm not, you know, unless they have like an entertainment category, I'm usually pretty terrible at it.
Oh man. Me and my dad used to watch it every single day after school.
Yeah.
I'd get home from school roughly around like 3 o'clock,
yeah.
3:15, and I'd go and sit with my dad and we'd always watch Jeopardy and try to beat each other at it.
So, you know, what's really funny is that, like, you know, this is how the generational thing that's different between us is that I would get home from school around 3:30 and watch Match Game. That's the game. Well,
that's educational in its own ways, you know?
Exactly right. I learned the word boobs at a very young age.
You learned the art of the innuendo.
Tinkle. The word tinkle. But yeah, no, and I was good at Rock and Roll Jeopardy.
Sure.
You know?
You and Mark McGrath.
Yeah, Mark McGrath was the best. The champion of Rock and Roll Jeopardy. But I mean, I like watching Jeopardy, and obviously Alex Trebek is great. He's a fantastic game show host who has been on a lot of game shows, as we discussed last week. You know, a lot of people just associate him with Jeopardy, but he did like High Rollers, he did Classic Concentration. Many of the game show hosts had multiple jobs over the years. Bill Cullen, I believe, had the most. As we discussed last week, he hosted 26 game shows or something like that. So, but Alex Trebek is obviously closely identified with Jeopardy. The show's been on forever and has been popular in that time slot on Channel 7 there at 3:30 forever. It's like Wheel of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune 6:30.
You set your clock to it.
Everybody watches Wheel of Fortune at 6:30. But recently, Alex Trebek has announced that he is undergoing treatment for stage 4 pancreatic cancer. And though it was previously seemed like his cancer was near remission, Trebek revealed in October that his chemotherapy treatments were making it harder and harder for him to continue hosting the show. And unsurprisingly, concerns about Trebek's health have hung over every episode of the show since Trebek announced his diagnosis. And on today's installment of the annual Tournament of Champions, I'm going to ruin this guy's name. Contestant Dayruv Gaur decided to blow his chance at answering the final Jeopardy clue by offering a note of support to Trebek. Why don't we play the audio and then we'll talk more about it.
Dhruv, you're smiling. I like that. Let's take a look at your response. Did you come up with the right one? No? What is "we love you" out? That's very kind. Thank you. Cost you $19.95. You're left with $5. Okay.
And obviously it got him choked up.
Yeah.
I got a little getting a little verklempt right now.
Because you never hear Alex like that. He's just always very
stoic
and
Reading "We love you, Alex" in place of an answer, Trebek became visibly choked up for a moment. Though ever the professional, Trebek did manage to add, "That's very kind, thank you," before continuing on with his regular hosting duties. On Twitter, as hashtag "We love you, Alex" began to trend, Gaur offered some more information about what made him decide to go for the emotional victory, if not the actual Jeopardy victory, saying that Trebek had just informed the contestants that he was continuing his cancer treatments. Gaur said he couldn't stop thinking about Trebek during the game, so when Final Jeopardy came, he didn't immediately know the answer. He decided he'd write his note instead. He also tweeted that the Tournament of Champions players are working together to raise money to fight pancreatic cancer. So, lovely little moment on Jeopardy today. So that was really nice. Very cool. And Alex Trebek, man, he's the best. My old producer, Andy Herman, from a long time ago, it's been a while, his wife was on Jeopardy.
Oh, really?
She actually made it, Maggie, yeah.
That's tough, too.
Oh, man, are you kidding?
That's really tough.
Yeah, no. Obviously, she's smart.
Sure.
Very, very, very smart. And she said it was a really great experience. Like, it was a lot of fun. And Andy went out to the taping, you know, and so we talked about it on the air, and we played some of the audio back. I watched the episode, and she came in second. She did not win. But she said she had a great time, and she did really, you know, she was at one point she was tearing through categories. But she said it was great. I know some other people have, you know, been on game shows, but Jeopardy, I mean, I wouldn't even attempt it.
No. Well, we'll see if they ever do film Jeopardy.
The screening process is a really tough one. I mean, it's obviously because the questions on Jeopardy are pretty sophisticated and pretty, you know, you got to be pretty intelligent to be on that show. So the screening process goes on for a long time. You have to go through stages. I remember back in the early 2000s. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came through town to get people to screen people to be on the show, and they had they were going to do a special film version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. So I obviously went out, and the auditions and the test, because you had to take a test, you know. The auditions, the reason I'm laughing is because it's completely absurd. So you'd have to fill out a form, and then you have to, you know, do a test, and then they grade your test, and then either you move on or you don't move on. So I obviously didn't make it on the show, but Eric was there. Eric and I went. We met up, and it was at medieval times. It was at medieval times, which I just found endlessly amusing. So we waited outside, waited in line, and finally filed in, you know, to medieval times, and sat in that big tournament thing with a, you know, an empty arena with, you know, dirt in the middle of the where they joust.
Yeah.
And we sat at those long tables, not unlike, you know, a cable guy, and took the test. And that's the only time I've ever been in there. I've never been to medieval times for a meal or to watch the jousting. So the only time I've ever been to medieval times was to audition for the movie version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. It just was surreal. And it was like 10 o'clock in the morning, you know?
A time when no one should be at medieval times.
Yeah, and not even, you know, none of the employees. I was disappointed that none of the employees were in costume, you know?
Was it Janine Garofalo?
Yeah. Dude, please give me a break. I got a lot of tables. They don't have silver. They didn't have silver because he asked for silverware. Matthew Broderick asked for silverware, and she says they did not have silverware in medieval times. So we do not have silverware here in medieval times. And then Matthew Broderick goes, "Oh, but did they have Pepsi in medieval times?" Dude, give me a break. I got a lot of tables.
Classic.
Wildly underrated movie. It got destroyed when it came out, and a lot of it had to do with, you know, what they really went after Jim Carrey on that one, because that's the movie where he broke the record for how much people get paid in a movie. Like, his salary was millions for that movie. And so, you know, when the movie didn't do well at the box office, he took it on the chin. Like, everybody went after Jim Carrey. And now people go, "Oh, it's a good movie," because it is a good movie.
Yeah, joke's on them. His scene where he's singing Jefferson Airplane is amazing.
It's the whole movie's good. It's dark and twisted and really, really funny. Ben Stiller directed that one. So, all right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, we're going to talk about some great classic movie palaces right here on WGN. Everyone's gone to the movie. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we are here till 5 a.m. We are going to talk about Christmas music, and it's already been played 24/7, so we're going to talk about that, but we're specifically going to talk about the worst Christmas songs of all time. We're also going to talk about worst menu items on every chain restaurant. Neil Young's birthday today. So we will talk about that as well. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. All right. So if anybody who's a regular listener, to this show knows that my movie going experiences when I was younger, when I was a kid, all involved the great movie palaces that were in the Loop, downtown Loop, and they weren't in great shape. They weren't in great shape when I went to see the movies down there in the 70s. They were kind of, at that point, they were kind of grindhouses, and they weren't in fantastic shape when I went down there. But they were still beautiful and fantastic, and I loved them. And there were like 15 theaters within a 4-block radius in the Loop, and that's just not the case anymore. It's not the case anymore a lot of places. So we wanted to talk about those great movie palaces. Joining me in studio is Gerald Gary. Hey, Gerald, how are you, man?
Great. Great. I'm doing well. Thanks.
Good, man. And you are part of the Regal Avalon Theater, which is being refurbished and rebuilt.
That's right. The Avalon Regal Theater, located in the South Shore community, was born as the Avalon Theater in 1927,
mm-hmm.
and was revitalized in the late 80s to the tune of about $20 million, and was reborn as the New Regal Theater, and stayed open for about 10 or 15 years, and probably hasn't seen the light of day for the past 10 or 15 years,
mm-hmm.
and we're involved with efforts bringing it back to the light of day.
I think that's great, man. I really do. And I want to bring into the conversation April Wright, who is the director of a movie called Going Attractions, the definitive story of movie palaces. And it's being screened tonight at a movie palace, by the way, at the Music Box Theater, tonight at 7 o'clock. And let's bring April in right here. Hi, April.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm good. I'm hoping to get to Chicago in time for that screening tomorrow.
Yeah, now you're stuck in New York, right?
Yeah. They canceled a whole bunch of flights to Chicago after, a plane slid on the runway or something there,
yeah,
so they got all worried.
No. Yeah, the plane slid off the runway. There's some really creepy footage of that that's
Yikes.
Available online.
Yeah.
So are you actually at LaGuardia right now?
I'm at a hotel right outside of LaGuardia,
oh, okay.
right at the airport. Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say, because that's like one of the worst places on the planet to be. So,
right. Well, now I can't say that I never spent the night in Queens, New York. Now I have.
It was better than Disney Icecapades at O'Hare.
Yeah,
apparently.
There you go. So, April, you're familiar, obviously, with the Avalon Regal.
Absolutely. We shot there, and Gerald is in the film.
Mm-hmm. We're very excited about that, and we're so happy to have you on. First of all, let me ask you about the movie itself. April, tell us about where it came from, what the idea that you wanted to celebrate these movie palaces, and let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, it's really a whole history of cinema, because it starts at the beginning of the motion picture, when we first saw these in, you know, penny arcades, and then Nickelodeons, and then in the 19-teens and 20s, these really gorgeous, ornate buildings were built just for us to see movies. I always say that in other countries, they built palaces for their royalty. We don't have royalty here, but we have movies, and that's what we built our palaces for. And you're right, all over Randolph and State Street, there were a ton of gorgeous movie palaces.
Yeah.
A few are left. People probably don't even realize the Oriental and the Palace in the Chicago were built for movies.
Right.
But we can get into all of that.
Yeah, no, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s, April, they weren't in great shape. At that point, they were kind of grindhouses, but you could still see the you could still see the beauty in them. And I treasure, you know, growing up in the 70s and going to see all those movies, you know, in those theaters in the Loop, even if they weren't in the greatest shape.
Yeah, when I lived in Chicago, which was after college in late 80s, I would go to the Logan, the Davis, the Village on Clark was still there.
Yeah.
And the United Artists was still there on Randolph, but it was closed down. And I just remember seeing it, walking by it, think, you know, it had that huge, huge marquee.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, why in the world would anybody let this get into bad shape? and you know, my family took us to not only movie palaces like this, but also drive-ins. And that's what really got me interested in this topic, is that I went to these theaters growing up, and I made a documentary first about drive-ins, and then the movie palaces was sort of a natural follow-up.
Yeah.
And Chicago has such beautiful movie palaces. I just had to really emphasize them in the film. So Chicago plays a really heavy role in the film.
Yeah. Well, Gerald, tell me about your background with the Avalon Regal.
Well, outside of growing up across the street from it.
Oh, he grew up across the street.
Zero background in renovating vaudeville movie houses.
Yeah.
Let me say that for the record.
Mm-hmm.
But I always, you know, drove past the building. A lot of people think it's like a mosque or something that has to do with like Islamic culture, when mm-hmm. in fact it's just the architecture of the building, but you can see it from the skyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of this like mysterious building that a lot of people pass by and they're not really certain what it is or what's going on in there. And the history of the building itself is both fortunately and unfortunately lost to oral history. A mm-hmm. lot of people tell stories about shows and different productions that have happened at the building, but there's very little footage on YouTube because, you know, when this place was really at its height, people didn't have camera phones, so there was no record right. outside of, save for some articles about, you know, some of the larger shows that were happening at the theater. But most of the people really know how important this building is, but it's almost like a myth. You know,
right.
you only know about the theater unless you know.
And his Gerald's Theater, the Avalon Regal Theater, was designed by an architect named John Eberson. And his primary style was a style called an atmospheric theater, which when you walked into it, it has like a blue sky with twinkling stars,
sure.
sometimes with clouds moving across it. And he's a very famous architect. This is kind of a funny story. I went to a theater in Sydney, Australia, and I have a shot of it in the film. And they were telling me there that they had one there in Sydney and also one in New Zealand that was that style, the atmospheric style. And for, you know, a century, they thought that an Australian architect had designed it because they had national pride, so they had put the Australian architectural firm's name on it. And years later, they discovered the original blueprints, and turns out those theaters were also designed by John Eberson
wow.
from the United States.
Yeah, we have some of those in the city. The patio was had that was atmospheric. The music box where you're going to be screening the movie tomorrow,
and that's one as well. Yeah,
and so there was one on Irving Park called the Commodore that I believe had those. That's another thing that I miss. April is the neighborhood movie theaters, like in the middle of a neighborhood in the city. There would be like a beautiful sort of movie palace where you could just go
exactly
and walk to. I miss that.
Yeah, and that's exactly the Avalon Regal Theater. It's right in smack dab in the middle of a neighborhood and at really the largest intersection of streets on the south side of
yeah.
the city. You got the Skyway coming down over there, but it's really a residential community.
Yeah. Yeah,
that
yeah.
this building is situated in, because
yeah.
again, it was built as a vaudeville movie palace.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
April, you've mentioned that you actually also made a film about drive-ins. That's another thing that's virtually dead. I have a friend who actually runs a drive-in in Dixon, Illinois, called the Midway, and he is devoted to keeping the drive-in alive. You know, and a lot of drive-ins closed when everybody had to switch to digital. Because it's the equipment is so expensive.
Very expensive,
But the drive-in is a special thing that I know a lot of young kids don't even know about. What was your experience when you were growing up going to the drive-in?
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up north of Chicago. I was in Zion. So we went to the drive-in in Grays Lake. We went to the one in Waukegan. And then there was one right across the border in Kenosha. And unfortunately, all of those are gone.
Yep.
And there was one in West Chicago that actually closed this year. And I think the one out in McHenry is the only one in the Chicago
area
anymore.
That's pretty much, that's the only one, really.
Yeah.
'Cause we used to go to the Twin Drive-in in Wheeling all the time. There was one called the Sunset in Lincolnwood that we would go to on a regular basis.
Yeah, they were everywhere.
Yeah,
Everybody went to these places growing up. Yeah.
Well, I've not seen that film, but I really do want to see it because I love the drive-in. But hey, April, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, and Gerald, hang on, you too. Okay.
All right.
So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the movie and about the refurbishing of the Avalon Regal Theater. So we'll do all that coming up right here on 720 WGN. Okay, welcome. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday, get your request in, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. I am joined live in studio with Gerald Gary, who is runs the Avalon Regal Theater and is getting it back into shape. And we're talking about movie palaces, because being screened tonight at the Music Box Theater at 7 o'clock is Going Attractions, the definitive story of movie palaces. It's a terrific movie, and the director, April Wright, is here, stuck in New York because of weather. And hopes
but
to...
I'm going to be in Chicago tomorrow in time for that screening.
Yes.
And we have a Q&A afterwards. So
yeah, let me just say, it's a terrific movie, April.
Thank you.
And you know, having grown up going to those places and seeing, you know, Chicago featured prominently in the film, was really great. And what was it about, what motivated you to make this movie?
Well, I went to places like this growing up, and even as I got older and a lot of them were in disrepair, I really wanted to know why, what happened. And especially after college, I lived downtown. I lived in South Dearborn in the Printer's Row area, but I would go up to the Davis, to the Logan, that were, now they've come back, they've been refurbished and restored, but those were neighborhood movie palaces, yeah, that were not good condition at the time in the late 80s and the 90s. But if I had a choice between a multiplex or going to a theater like that, where you could look around the room and see the, you know, the beautiful proscenium and the curtains, the, you know, the velvet curtains and the, you know, just the beautiful environment, I would always choose that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's a better experience.
I agree. And, you know, it's funny because I grew up very close to the Davis. I lived at Addison and Lincoln when I was a kid. And my friend Dan and I, every Saturday, no matter what was playing, we would walk to the Davis Theater. We'd go to the Hild Library first, and then we'd go to the Davis Theater, and we'd see whatever was playing there. And this was every Saturday, and it was always a double feature. And that was when the Davis was just one theater. You know, obviously now they've split it up. The Logan, same thing.
Exactly.
Logan used to be one theater, and they've split that one
up too.
That's right. It was great growing up. My dad would take me to the Loop on Sundays to see movies in those big theaters, and then on Saturdays I'd be at the Davis. And that's how I grew up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing now is that, you know, if these theaters are left, people probably wouldn't realize they were built for movies. But also, there's so much streaming now, and, you know, for generations in this country, literally for 100 years, we all grew up with this experience of seeing movies on the big screen, larger than life. All the expressions that we use talk about this magical experience with the movies, and I think that's changing now with streaming and generations that maybe don't have this experience of seeing films in a theater like these.
Yeah, it's true. Let's talk a little bit, Gerald. Kanye West is going to invest $1 million to help the Avalon Regal Theater get back on its feet?
That's correct. We're very excited to have his team involved. He's brought a tremendous amount of resources to the project. And as you can imagine, with the kind of star power he has, we're able to bring a lot of positive attention to the community.
Yeah, that's great. Now, how bad a shape is it in?
Well, you know what? Frankly, it's not in bad shape at all. We've been fortunate to have had most of the restoration already done in the late 80s. As I mentioned, there was a restoration done in 1987 is when the building reopened as the new Regal Theater. And most of the restorative work, as far as from an architectural perspective, was done at that time. Anything cosmetic that needs to be done at this point is really just touching up. Most of our work has been focused on upgrading the systems, the HVAC, the plumbing behind the walls, you know, all the unsexy stuff, if you will. But, you know, I'd much rather be dealing with plumbing than landmarks, quite frankly, on a project.
Yeah.
Like this. So we're fortunate in that regard that most of that work has already been done.
Do you have a timetable for getting it all up and running?
Well, you know, the timetable is always yesterday, so I like to say tomorrow, but coming soon to a theater near you.
Right. Now, I know it's not an easy thing, man. This is a big project, you know.
That's right.
It's so nice of Kanye to help you out with that kind of money. That's great, man.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
That's great.
Well, and I think the idea is you want to make it sort of like the Apollo is in Harlem to the South Side and have a full you know, opportunity for cultural experience.
That's right. That's the idea. A lot of people see that community as really a desert of, you know, just really a lack of businesses. And our goal is to really bring back that building so we can create sort of a spark to the firestorm of development, if you will, that I think is possible in that area, and then bring other things that can help the activity of the building.
That's great, man. Great. That's great. Good luck, man. April, tell me about the making of the movie. How long did it take you to do?
This one took me about 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I got Leonard Maltin on board pretty early.
Yep.
I saw him speaking one time, and I knew he was a film critic, but I learned that he also was a great historian and that he also had so much knowledge about the buildings themselves. So he was excellent. And then we shot most of the interviews fairly quickly. All the interviews are in a different movie palace. We also feature the Uptown in Chicago,
yes,
which is another one we might want to talk about.
Yes.
And then it just took a while to do the editing because basically, from a creative standpoint, three people made the film. Me and my producing partner, Rachel Pond, she and I made the film, did the editing. She did a lot of the visual effects. And then we had a third person creatively named Chris Wormer, who did the score, which audiences really love the score.
Absolutely.
And he's been a guitarist in the Charlie Daniels band for the last 20 years.
Wow.
So he writes songs with Charlie and records, but this is the first time he's done a film score. And he really did an amazing job. So,
yeah.
You mentioned the
Uptown. I've been championing the Uptown Theater to get back open because it is a beautiful theater. I remember when I was a kid, I went there to see movies. I saw the Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood there. I remember specifically. And it was a concert venue, but lots of Prince played there and other really great bands played there. And it's just such a gorgeous building, and the lobby is unbelievable and everything. And it's just sitting there in Uptown, right, you know, next to the Green Mill, not really doing anything. And
not for much longer.
It's kind of a time capsule right now because it literally has been closed since the 80s.
Yep.
And it's had a little bit of water damage, but other than that, it needs restoration, but it's really magnificent. It's so ornate. It was one of the most beautiful movie palaces ever built.
Yep.
And they're also working on a restoration there, and we show clips of it in the film, which it's really hard to get to see that theater, so we were really lucky to finally get inside there and hoping that they get the rest of the funding they need to bring that place back to life. Because I would love to go in there and see a movie or a concert again.
Yeah.
If there's anybody that can bring that place back, it's Jerry Michelson. And here's a story for you. I actually used to intern for Jerry Michelson.
Oh, did you? I've had him on the show.
And he was the first person I called before I bought the Regal.
Is that right? Well, that's a smart thing to do.
Jerry, I need you to pray for me.
Gerald, did you grow up going to the Avalon Regal?
I've been to a few shows, but for the most part, as I said earlier, most of the stuff was happening in the 90s, and I was too young. You know, I went to maybe a few free, you know, shows, the Chicago Symphony, yet I might have done in the holiday season or something. But
yeah, what was it like growing up across the street from the place, though?
Well, you know, it was crazy. I mean, I always saw cars. It was always busy. So
yeah.
I really saw the impact of the lack thereof, if you will, that happened when the building shut down. I mean, there's so many different businesses located around the business that were dependent on all of those folks coming, you know, every night.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be April. Yeah. I'm so excited for you to show your movie in a movie palace because the Music Box is a beautiful theater. One of my favorite places, and the programming that they do there, they do it right. The people at the Music Box know what they're doing and they do it right. And it's great. And I'm so excited for you to show your movie there tonight.
Yeah, me too. Because when I lived in Chicago, I went to the Music Box all the time.
Yeah.
So it's really personally very exciting for me to go back. Well, it was exciting for me to shoot in the Music Box.
Sure.
We shot one of the interviews in there, and it's featured in the film. But to actually play the documentary there is really cool for me.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fantastic. And I urge everybody to go out and see it. I really do. Come on out tonight. April will be there. She promises.
Mm-hmm.
I will be there. And Gerald will be there. Jerry will be there. We'll be talking about all these theaters. And especially about the Chicago history, and people will probably remember a lot of the places they'll see in the film.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Well, it's a terrific movie, and everybody should go and check it out tonight. It's going to be a special night, 7 o'clock at the Music Box Theater. Going Attraction is the definitive story of movie palaces, and then stick around afterwards for a Q&A, and April will be there. Gerald, good luck. Good luck with your with the theater, and I hope it opens soon.
Thanks a lot.
And April, thank you very much, and safe travels. Okay.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Take care. There's April Wright. She's the director. And Gerald, thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Okay. Again, tonight, Going Attractions, the definitive story of movie palaces, 7 o'clock at the Music Box Theater. It's a really beautiful film. So, okay, we'll take a quick break for the news right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago here till 5. Your overnight dude here at 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday. You're here, two for Tuesday. It's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. What was that and who requested that?
That's a little Frank Zappa coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park.
Ah, okay. There you go, a little Zappa. Okay. Welcome back, everybody. So speaking of music, which we're going to be doing even more this morning, but specifically Christmas music, and we're going to talk about some of the possibly the worst Christmas songs of all time. But before we get into that, today happens to be the birthday of one of my favorite singer-songwriters ever, Neil Young. Neil Young turns 74 today, 74 years old. And obviously, you know, he's been around for many years in the music world, you know, with Buffalo Springfield, started with Buffalo Springfield, and then obviously Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. But we're going to be talking about his solo albums. They did a readers poll in Rolling Stone magazine where they had the readers, you know, pick their favorite albums, the best of Neil Young albums. So that's what we're going to talk about. If you guys are Neil Young fans, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. When did you first hear Neil Young, Tom?
So I first started listening to Neil Young because my Uncle Ron over in Scotland is a massive Neil Young fan. Mm-hmm. Massive Neil Young fan. So he gave me his copy of Rust Never Sleeps on vinyl to take back with me across the pond, and I managed to safely bring it back to the States, and my dad's old turntable still worked, and I would listen to Rust Never Sleeps, and I was blown away. I couldn't believe how good this guy was, and I started getting a little bit deeper and then seeing the connections that he had to more modern music, like grunge.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was full into like Pearl Jam and Nirvana as well. I was like, oh, this is where they got it from, man. The flannel and the sound and everything. So that's why I really started to enjoy Neil Young. And I also really like his commitment to like audio fidelity.
Yeah.
He's had this whole thing about high-res audio and really trying to push it. He had his own music player for a period of time, the Pono, the ill-fated high-res music player. But I've always appreciated that he's been totally about the music and presenting it as best as possible.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite artists. I grew up listening to him, and I remember at a young age loving Buffalo Springfield at a very young age, and I didn't put two and two together that, you know, that Neil Young was part of that. Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, but the solo stuff is my favorite. The stuff that he does either by himself or with Crazy Horse. He released an album with Pearl Jam, toured with Pearl Jam. I saw them on that tour. Like, it was just Pearl Jam was his backup band.
Yeah.
He is, you know, the nicknamed Godfather of Grunge started to get thrown around, you know, in the 90s because of his obvious influence on what was being played at that time. And he had a resurgence in popularity at that time, too. He released some great stuff around that time, too. But he's a guy that will experiment. He doesn't care. Like he'll you know. He did an album of electric music, electronic music.
Was that 1982's Trans?
Yeah, Trans, which is a very movie. Weird album.
Yeah.
He also did a rockabilly album. He's always experimenting. He always has, and he's just a great songwriter. By the way, I totally forgot. You know who he's married to?
Oh, I do. Oh, my God. Who is he married to?
Daryl Hannah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it's his third wife. I remember when they started dating, I was like, what? Neil Young and Daryl Hannah? So.
She's a big fan of the Godfather of grunge, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe he likes Kill Bill. I don't know. But, but yeah, it's a strange couple. I mean, God bless him. You know, that's awesome.
Sure.
But it was like, I would not think. And Daryl Hannah's got to be 20 years young. No, she's got to be older than me because I'm 54. So she's probably, how old is Daryl? Can we find out how old Daryl Hannah is? Because she's not 74. I know that much. She's not his age. She's got to be like maybe 59 or something like that.
So she is 58.
58.
Yeah, she's born 1960.
Okay. So she's 58. All right. Well, so we're talking about, Neil Young as being so influential and, and such a great songwriter. And a very cool dude. And he does stand up for, he does stand for things. He's Canadian. People forget that sometimes. But the results range over a 30-year period from 69 to 92. This is the reader's poll that they did in Rolling Stone. Though the vast majority of the selected albums were released in the 70s, it was an incredibly fruitful time for Young when he was recording albums at a faster rate than his label could even release them. So they got the results of the reader's poll here. And by the way, his albums are great, but I will say this. There is no question in my mind that the best greatest hits package of all time is Decade. Neil Young's Decade. Every song on it, it's a double album too. Every song on it is great. Every single song is great. And it is, I mean, I have it, even though I have, even though I have most of the albums, I have Decade. And it's remarkable. Like it's like song after song after song after song. It's like, my God, this guy.
Well, and greatest hits albums used to be a totally different beast. I think back in the day where it was really an entry point for a lot of people to catch up, because if you didn't have the records ahead of time, well, how are you supposed to get into Neil Young? And somebody gives you Decade, and you're just getting
the best
of Neil Young.
But the way we consume music now is obviously completely different than it used to be. There's no such thing as greatest hits because everybody can just get any song they want.
They can make their own greatest hits.
Exactly. But I used to love greatest hits packages. I thought they were albums. I thought they were great. I loved them.
The best-selling Eagles album of all time is a greatest hits pack, which I always make fun of. Like, well, not a single album, but their greatest hits. It's kind of cheating, if you ask me, but hey.
The best of the Eagles is it's the biggest-selling album of all time, that album, which pains me. But I remember Elton John had at least two greatest hits releases, and they were great. And it's like you get all the hits in one place. I think that's pretty cool. But like I said, none are better than Decade. Decade is just, it's ridiculous.
I like the scene in Everybody Wants Some where his roommate is just like, hey, can I borrow this?
Yeah.
Well, can I get it back? Maybe.
Yeah.
It's taken Decade.
Yeah. So. All right, well, let's see. Here's what the albums that they chose. The number 10 comes in with Time Fades Away. In early 1973, Neil Young should have been on top of the world. His most recent record, Harvest, had propelled him to stardom, and the single Heart of Gold was one of the most popular songs of the previous year. Heart of Gold, great song. He's got so many great songs, it's ridiculous. I think my favorite Neil Young song? God, it's tough. Needle in the Damage Done is incredible. I think I got to go with Cortez the Killer. I love that song, man. I love that song. You know who does a killer cover of that? Dave.
All right.
They do a killer cover of Cortez. And it's, it, you know, whenever you go and they pull that out, it's very, we go, ooh, he's playing Cortez tonight. And they do, it's like 25 minutes long.
It's the only way to play Cortez.
Yeah. A 62-date arena tour was booked, and it should have been a triumphant victory lap, but painful back problems, a recent death of Crazy Horse guitarist Danny Whitten, band tension, and Young's general unease with fame turned it into an endless slog. Young also decided to challenge the audience by playing a ton of unreleased material that wound up on the 73 live disc Time Fades Away. Songs like L.A. and Don't Be Denied are absolutely brilliant. This wasn't the disc people were pining for, and it sold poorly. He had yet to release it on CD. He has yet to release it on CD. Nobody expected Time Fades Away, and I'm not sorry I put it out, Neil Young told Rolling Stone reporter Cameron Crowe in 1975. I didn't need the money. I didn't need the fame. You got to keep changing shirts, old ladies, whatever. Old ladies.
Wow.
That's since 1973, man.
I haven't heard someone refer to their girlfriend.
That's my old lady.
My old lady.
It's a big thing in the 60s and 70s, man. I'd rather keep changing and lose a lot of people along the way. If that's the price, I'll pay it. I don't give a crap if my audience is 100 or 100 million. It doesn't make any difference to me. I'm convinced that what sells and what I do are two completely different things. If they meet, it's coincidence.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just laying it down.
Yeah. And just, you know, like the fact that he, you know, like people would come to see him and he would play like a bunch of stuff that nobody knew and put a whole album out. Put a whole album of unreleased stuff that was never released that the audiences were like, what is he playing? What is this? And the next thing you know, it's an album. Neil Young,
there
man.
You go.
All right. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in here talking about Neil Young on his 74th birthday, one of the best singer-songwriters ever. And if you guys want to jump in with your thoughts, talk or text at 312-981-7200. Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. That's the twofer of Zappa right there. And if you want to jump in with your thoughts on Neil Young, we want to hear from you via talk or text at 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday. Those requests in, too, at 312-981-7200. Neil Young turned 74 today, so we're talking about him. So here's this is the track listing for Decade. Okay? So, and it was a triple album, and it's 35 songs. So you've got Down to the Wire, Burned, Mr. Soul, Broken Arrow, Expecting to Fly, Sugar Mountain. Listen to these songs. I Am a Child, The Loner, Cinnamon Girl, Down by the River. Oh, man, that's a good song. Cowgirl in the Sand, I Believe in You, After the Gold Rush, Southern Man, Helpless. Come on now. Ohio, which he wrote in hours after the Kent State incident happened. Soldier, Old Man, A Man Needs a Maid, Harvest, Heart of Gold, Star of Bethlehem, Needle in the Damage Done. Tonight's the Night, Tired Eyes, Walk On, For the Turnstiles, Winter Long, Deep Forbidden Lake, Like a Hurricane, Love is a Rose, Cortez the Killer, Campaigner, Long May You Run. I mean, what does not get much better than that. It just doesn't. Yeah, it's a couple of texts here. 773 area code says, after the Gold Rush, Don't Let It Bring You Down, I Fell in Love with a Girl and She Didn't Know I Was Alive. 765 area code says, favorite Neil Young song is Cinnamon Girl, favorite Neil Young album is Rust Never Sleeps. I've seen Neil Young probably, six, seven times, and great every time. The next album that they pick is Ragged Glory, which is a tremendous record, a great record. Neil Young spent much of the 80s experimenting with different genres from new wave to country to rockabilly and blues, While all these albums have some great moments, they weren't exactly what his fan base was craving. Label boss David Geffen even sued Young for recording what quote-unquote unrepresentative music. But in 1990, Young called Crazy Horse back into the studio to cut a classic rock disc that stands up to anything that he did in the 70s. Country Home, Love to Burn, Effin' Up wouldn't have sounded out of place on Rust Never Sleeps, and this was just the beginning of Young's huge comeback. A new genre of music would break big the next year, and journalists started calling Young the godfather of grunge. Ragged Glory is a tremendous album. Such a great album. Harvest Moon is next here on the poll. A lovely album. From the minute Harvest hit the top of the charts in 1972, Neil Young faced pressure to record a follow-up record with the same country rock sound. It took him 20 years to finally do it. People had been asking me to do it for 20 years, and I never could figure out what it was in the first place, Young told Rolling Stone in 1993, adding that he wrote a bunch of songs in Colorado that evoked the old Harvest sound in his head. That's when I discovered what the hell I was doing, but only because the songs made me do it. It just happened again. Whatever it was that happened back then, the disc reunited Young with many of the same musicians that he worked with on Harvest, including James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt on background vocals. The disc was a huge success, firmly establishing Neil Young as one of the few 1970s rock acts capable of creating work on par with their classics. Yeah, Harvest Moon is a beautiful record, and I saw him on that tour at the Chicago Theater. He played two nights at the Chicago Theater, and it was just him on stage with like an organ and a bunch of guitars, and it was a very intimate thing. As far as I could tell, he didn't have a set list, but it was interesting. My friend Mike and I went on the second night, and because evidently the first night, this was at the Chicago Theater. The first night, because it was a very quiet show. This was not. You know, with Crazy Horse or anything. This was not when you know, Neil Young goes electric. He goes electric. I mean, he's got a whole album called Arc Weld. One of the albums is all feedback. So he's capable of doing that. But this was a very intimate acoustic night, so it was very, very quiet. So evidently, on the first night at the Chicago Theater, there were so many drunks in the audience, they just kept screaming during the show. And again, this was one of those shows where Neil Young is just sitting on stage going, on what instrument am I going to pick up here? What song am I going to play here? Very quiet. And he cut the show short because everybody was loaded. And so many people were loaded in the audience and screaming. He cut that show short. So I was glad I went the second night, because on the second night, he banned beer sales. Nobody was drunk, and he played for 2 hours. And so, yeah, and it was unbelievable. So I've seen Neil Young a bunch of times. I saw him with Pearl Jam. Saw him at the Allstate Arena, which used to be, of course, the Rosemont Horizon.
I wish I could have seen him when he toured with Sonic Youth.
I saw that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The stories of, like, Sonic Youth opening up, and they were so loud that people just left. And some folks would just sit with their hands over their head because they couldn't stand him. And he loved Sonic Youth.
Oh, he loved Sonic Youth. No, there's no question about it. But the other thing is that I think one of the best shows I ever saw was in probably 91 or 92. It was at the Allstate Arena. It was with Crazy Horse. And it was unbelievable. And then what the really amazing thing was, afterwards, we were walking around the side of the building, and he came out from the door, and he was walking to his bus, and I patted him on the back, and I was like, Neil Young! And he was with some chick. I don't even know.
Some chick named Daryl Hannah or something.
No, that was a long time ago. It was long before the Daryl Hannah thing. So, but he's just great, man. And just that the list of songs that I read that are on Decade, I mean, it's just classic after classic after classic. The stories behind some of these songs are unbelievable, too. Needle in the Damage Done is heartbreaking. I mean, obviously, Ohio is about Kent State, and wrote hours after the incident and recorded the next day.
He's just got a furious work ethic.
He does, and he's got an enormous amount of talent. So, you know, all right. We got a break here for the news coming up. We want to hear from you, though, at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Talk or text, celebrating the birthday of Neil Young, one of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time. turns 74 today. So if you you want to jump in, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We're going to talk more about some of the albums here. Now, this Reader's Poll, by the way, was in Rolling Stone, and that's what we're looking at right now. We've got a few more to go here. We're at number seven, and we'll get to that. By the way, number seven is Zuma, which is a pretty great record too. So we'll talk more about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for Talk and Text. Neil Young is what we're talking about, and we'll pick it back up after the news. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday. It's 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. What? Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Angelo in Bridgeport. It's Small Faces.
Ah, yes. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. And it is Neil Young's 74th birthday today. So we're talking about his great albums and his great music and celebrating his birthday. Rolling Stone did a readers poll where they wanted the readers to pick their favorite albums. And coming in at number six is Russ Never Sleeps, which we've mentioned several times already. Neil Young and Crazy Horse went on the road in the fall of 1978, playing a mixture of classics and brand new songs like Hey Hey My My, Into the Black, Powderfinger, and Sedan Delivered. Powderfinger, what a great song. They took the songs into the studio, overdubbed a little of them, and produced Russ Never Sleeps. Half acoustic, half electric, the disc doesn't have a single weak moment. The punk revolution was making many 1970s superstars seem like dinosaurs, but Neil Young seemed as current as ever. He even name-checks Sex Pistols frontman Johnny Rotten by name in Hey Hey My My. It would be another decade before Young would release an album that strong. Yes. All right, here is Russ on WGN. Hi, Russ.
Yeah, how are you, Nick?
All right.
I often wondered about when he was with Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, my favorite song was that Southern Man, and the guitar, he plays lead guitar on that. He's the lead vocals on that, too.
Yeah.
Was that all his song, or was that more?
No, he wrote
it. Crosby wrote it?
Yeah, no, he wrote it. Yeah, Neil Young wrote it.
That's all his song then, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's him. I mean, that's spectacular. That's got it all.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. All right, Russ, thanks.
Take care.
All right. So another thing, that song made Lynyrd Skynyrd mad. He gets name-checked in Sweet Home Alabama.
You know what? Good. I don't care. You know, Van Zant can kiss my grits.
Yeah.
Neil Young didn't say anything that was out of line. They were just mad because they're some good old boys,
yeah.
And he criticized them.
Yeah, well, no, he did. I mean, it's a powerful song. Southern Man is a really powerful song.
It's an incredible song.
Yeah. 316 area code says, Nick, my favorite Neil Young song is Old Man. Yeah. 773 area code says, Live Rust is my perfect Neil Young. I saw him on the tour where they had the little Jawas come out.
Little Jawas? What?
The little, you know, from the Star Wars.
Yeah.
You've not seen this?
No.
You've not seen Live Rust?
I've listened to Live Rust.
Have you seen the album cover?
I didn't notice
they have
any.
Jawas on the front. They bring the instruments out and stuff.
I guess I just never noticed that.
Yeah. They look like Jawas. I don't know. I mean, if he talked to George Lucas or what, but they were little dudes.
Can I get some Jawas?
With red eye lights. Instead of eyes, they had red lights on their. And they came out. If you look up Live Rust, like Google Live Rust and do like an image check. And I saw him on that tour.
Oh my God! Yeah,
yeah.
Oh, the little very big Jawas.
Yeah. I think he hired regular sized people, but. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, it was hilarious. So, it's it. Russ Never Sleeps, the album. If you look at the Russ Never Sleeps album, you can see them, all the guys dressed up like that. All right. Next album that is mentioned here is On the Beach. For many, many years, On the Beach was Neil Young's great lost album. The LP didn't generate a lot of heat when it came out in 1974, and Young didn't release it on CD until 2003. Its absence from the marketplace turned it into somewhat of a mythical album. Those who dug it up in the pre-internet days discovered an incredibly depressing album about the perils of fame. The opener, Walk On, confronts Young's critics, while the creepy Revolution Blues is told from the perspective of a Charles Manson-like serial killer. Side two is a more serene affair. Ambulance Blues and On the Beach are two of the strongest songs Young has ever written and two of the saddest. On the Beach is probably one of the most depressing records I've ever made, Young told Rolling Stone in 1975. I don't want to get down to the point where I can't even get up. I mean, there's something to going down there and looking around, but I don't know about sticking around.
It's too bad engineer Dan Long isn't here because he loves On the Beach. He loves Neil Young and he loves On the Beach.
Yeah. On the Beach is a great record. It is depressing, but it's a great record. How about this? Tonight's the Night. On the Beach may be a depressing album, but it's positively sunny next to Tonight's the Night. The disc was cut very quickly in late 1973 while Young was reeling from the loss of Danny Whitten and roadie Bruce Barry. It has a rushed, haphazard vibe that you rarely get from a major record. Neil Young told Cameron Crowe in 1970s, boy, this must have been a bit like a long interview because almost all the poll quotes from this are from that Cameron Crowe interview in 1975. Putting this album out was almost an experiment. I fully expect some of the most determinedly worst reviews that I've ever had. I mean, if anybody really wanted to let go, they could do it with this one. And undoubtedly a few people will. Like many of Young's mid-70s albums, Tonight Tonight slowly grew in legend as the years went on and is now considered one of his best. We got some texts coming in here. Neil Young turning 74 today, 312-981-7200. 310 area code says, always loved Neil Young because he's always just seemed such an authentic artist interested just in the music rather than fame or fortune. 262 area code says, from the Stills Young album, I'm a big fan of the songs Long May You Run and Ocean Girl. Those are both great. 815 area code says, I saw him at Poplar Creek in Hoffman Estates, 83. He was playing with some Buddhist monk-looking dudes. Well, that's what we were just talking about. He played only one set of songs we recognized. It rained on top of it and made things worse. I never got lawn seats again. We were all kind of disappointed, yet it was a good time. Plenty of wine and weed. I was 22 years old. Plenty of wine and weed.
A few lids.
You're gonna find wine and weed at a Neil Young concert. That's what's gonna happen.
Well, apparently he's had some trouble getting his U.S. citizenship because of the weed thing.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because he's just honest. He's like, yeah, man.
Yeah,
I'm Neil Young.
You know, as remembering Poplar Creek, I used to. Man, I can't tell you the number of concerts I saw at Poplar Creek. And, yeah, I remember we saw Power Station at Poplar Creek, and I was very disappointed because Robert Palmer did not tour with them. Power Station, for people who don't know, they had a hit. They did a cover of Getting On, Bang a Gong, and that was a big hit. They had a couple of other, Some Like It Hot, and they released one album. They were a power group, the super group, and it was Andy Taylor and John Taylor from Duran Duran, Robert Palmer, and the late, great Tony Thompson on drums, who used to play drums for Chic, one of the best drummers that's ever lived. And they put out this album, Power Station, and I thought it was great. I think it's a great album. I love that record. So we went to go see him and found out that, it was at Poplar Creek, we found out that Robert Palmer wasn't getting, that he stopped, He left the tour right before Chicago.
Oh man!
And it was Michael DeBars. Michael DeBars was the lead singer. And it just, because I love Robert Palmer. I loved him. I thought he was great. And I love his voice. And Michael Tabaris is not an accurate replacement for Robert Palmer. So I remember being at Poplar Creek being very disappointed. And I also, this is the other thing that I remember. The only other person I've seen sweat more on stage than Michael Tabaris, who I was just like, is this guy, I mean, because he was sopping wet. Like, he sweats so much. But the sweatiest person I've ever seen on stage, without question, Scott Stapp. I was watching a Creed concert on Access TV some time ago, and I was worried for the guy. I was like, my God, I've never seen anybody sweat that much.
You know, Creed just gets him going, you know.
Yeah.
Some people.
He went through like four shirts, you know. I was concerned for the people in the front row because they were getting splashed with his sweat.
Welcome to the Creed Splash Zone.
Sweatiest person I've ever seen besides Michael Tabaris. Michael Tabaris was sweating like a pig.
Well, if you're gonna front Power Station, you better be working hard.
Yeah. You remember Arcadia?
Arcadia. Arcadia.
That was another Duran Duran offshoot supergroup.
Oh, man.
That was with Simon Le Bon and Nick Rhodes. And it was, they had one hit. It was called Election Day. That was the only hit they ever had. The band was called Arcadia. They put out one album, too.
Jeez.
And I bought it, of course. Because I love Duran Duran.
Sure.
I've always loved Duran Duran. I'll take the offshoots of Duran Duran.
Kind of makes it seem like they didn't like being in Duran Duran, but they kept splitting off with other members of Duran Duran.
You know, the thing about it was Duran Duran went through there were three people with the last name Taylor in the band, and none of them were related.
Which is so weird.
Because Roger Taylor was on drums, John Taylor was on bass, and Andy Taylor was on guitar. And, yeah. So, Andy Taylor released a solo album, which was great. It was called Thunder. It was awesome. He was the rocker of Duran Duran. But I went to go see Duran Duran at the Rosemont Horizon, at, you know, now the Allstate Arena. It was the loudest show. I've told you this before. It's the loudest show I've ever seen. Because they had to play over the shrieking girls who were screaming the entire time. And they had a big video screen behind them, and so whenever they would cut to certain members, the crowd got louder or not as loud, and John Taylor when they would show close-ups of John Taylor, you couldn't even hear yourself think that the girls would go nuts. But yeah, the thing about it was Duran Duran released an album of covers called Thank You. Do you remember this? They covered Zeppelin. They covered Thank You.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the whole album, they did White Lines. yeah, they did White Lines.
Like the
White Lines. Yeah. Yeah.
Visions, Dreams of Pets.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
It's great.
I think you're much more into Duran. I've got mad respect for Duran Duran, but they're not exactly at the top of my list.
Oh, no. I love Duran Duran. I've no apologies about loving Duran.
Power to him, but whew.
But that album of covers, I got that. Well, thank you. But I'll tell you what, though, they fell out of favor for, you know, for a while. Like Roger Taylor, the drummer, had like a nervous breakdown, had to leave, and so they broke up. But the Wedding album that came out in '93 was a massive comeback for them. It had Ordinary World on it, which was a huge hit. Come Undone was on that. A great record, and they were back. And I went to go see them on that comeback tour, and it was fantastic.
I will say, I think they did one of the better Bond songs of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Need a Kill. That's
great. Come on, it's awesome. But, like, that album, I mean, that was a big record for them, the Wedding album. And Ordinary World was a massive hit. And it's a great song. So, how'd we end up talking about Duran Duran while we're talking
Station.
About... Oh, Power Station.
Poplar Creek.
Yeah, oh, Poplar Creek, because it was because Poplar Creek. That's how it got there. All right, the next album that's mentioned by Neil Young here is Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere, When Buffalo Springfield split up in 1968, it was far from certain that Neil Young would continue to have a career. After all, he was just a guitar player from a one-hit wonder band. Richie Furay and Stephen Stills sang most of the songs. Neil was the guy in the fringe jacket that kept quitting. His self-titled debut in 1968 wasn't a huge hit, but just 6 months later, he realized Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere. He released Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere. It was the moment where people realized that Young was a major talent and wasn't going anywhere. Cinnamon Girl got him on the charts for the first time. Down by the River and Cowgirl in the Sand were the beginning of a four-decade jam with Crazy Horse, and it's still going. Okay. All right, we got a break here. We'll come back and wrap up the Neil Young talk right here on 720 WGN.
Over Bridge of Sights, to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spots, to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been. What did you do there?
I got high. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Angelo in Bridgeport.
Okay. Ichiku Park. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Hey, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Neil Young, 74 years old today, and we're celebrating that and talking about just how great this guy is and continues to be. So the top two albums, according to this reader's poll from Rolling Stone, number two is After the Gold Rush. Between the time he recorded Everybody Knows This Is Nowhere and After the Gold Rush, Neil Young joined a little group called Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. To put it mildly, they were a big success, and after they dramatically increased Young's profile, people rushed out to buy After the Gold Rush when it was a hit in 1970 in the summer, and they weren't disappointed. It's a brilliant showcase for Young's range, from the sci-fi piano ballad After the Gold Rush to the angry protest of Southern Man. The tunes blasted out of every car and every dorm in the country for the next year or so. And then the number one album is, of course, Harvest. You got to go with Harvest. No matter how much success Neil Young had before or after 1972, the lasting image many people have of the singer is him singing Heart of Gold with an acoustic guitar and harmonica. The song shot to number one that year, and it was inescapable. Old Man and Needle in the Damage Done hammered the acoustic troubadour image home even further, even though Young spent the next 20 years doing everything he could to shake that image. The disc was cut in Nashville, London, and at Young's California Ranch with a star-studded band, with an all-star band dubbed the Stray Gators. It was the beginning of a very long, fruitful relationship with pedal steel guitar player Ben Keith. In the liner notes of his 1977 compilation, Decade, Young wrote about the time period. The quote has probably been regurgitated more times than anything else the man has ever written, largely because it explains his next few albums with clarity. Heart of Gold put me in the middle of the road. Traveling there soon became a bore, so I headed for the ditch. Always unpredictable. Always great. Neil Young. Roger D. in Beloit texted in at 312-981-7200. There are so many great Neil Young songs, it's difficult to select just one. But right now, I would say Will to Love from American Stars and Bars, which also includes Like a Hurricane, is my favorite. It might be different later. That's another thing, too. That's true of so many great artists where it's like, yeah, I can't pick my favorite right now, but it'll change. Canadian Bill, I knew he had to chime in.
I mean, he's one of the patron saints of Canadian music. You gotta have Neil Young.
Yeah. I love the video for This Note's For You, anti-sellout song. Oh, I remember that. I remember when that came out. He caught a lot of flack for that, actually. 262 area code says, hey, Nick, my brother and I went to see Neil in Milwaukee a couple of years ago, and he sang a song about Monsanto Seed Company, and the beginning of the song, he had two girls in overalls and straw hats dancing around watering sunflowers. By the end of the song, he had grim reapers with blowtorches.
He had a penchant for some pretty good theatrics.
Yeah. Yeah. So, 74 years old. Is he working on? He's probably still working on stuff, right? He just had a year ago, he was touring.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I mean he keeps up with his archive. The Neil Young archive is really important to him,
mm-hmm.
Making sure that his music is as available as possible,
mm-hmm.
especially with the amount of music he's got. So,
yep. And then that Arkweld double album with the entire disc that's just feedback.
He ain't afraid of anything.
No, he's not. Fantastic. Okay, let's break. We're going to continue talking about music, but really bad Christmas music, because Christmas music has already started. It started like 2 weeks ago, almost. They started blasting the Christmas music, barely after Halloween. So we're going to talk about some really bad Christmas music. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The news is up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You hear me, 2 for Tuesday? One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. And it is November 12th, although you would think it's January 12th with the weather that we have through here. And they've already started Christmas music. Lifetime and the Hallmark.
Yep.
They've already started the Christmas. They started the Christmas movies like back in September or something, right?
They're nuts. They've had like a convention now.
Yeah. No, people love those things. My old producer, Dan Chagrou, his wife loves those things. Yeah.
Bless her.
So anyway, but the music is already, started to play. And I have here from Esquire magazine the 20 crappiest Christmas songs ever recorded, although they don't use the word crap in the article. And there's a story out of the UK here. A shop in York has banned cheesy Christmas songs for the sake of the staff morale, owners have said. Neither Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You or Slade's Merry Christmas Everybody will be played this year at York Gin, because having to endure such music for hours each day would ruin Christmas for shop floor employees, the shop's director said. Emma Godavilla said the move would be welcomed by shoppers tired of constant festive playlists pumped through the speaker systems of many high street shops from mid-November. Her shop, which is in the 16th century Tudor building in the heart of historic York, did not suit modern music. We do love Christmas, but we want our gin shop to be a cheese-free zone. We've tested lots of songs to see which sound okay and which sound weird, and there's a cutoff in the 1960s. Anything after that has been banned. Our lovely team are happy with the decision. They say lots of other shop staff are already going stir-crazy with the same Christmas hits being played on a loop. That said, if Mariah appeared in the shop, we would just have to overturn the ban and play All I Want for Christmas Is You. Instead, the shop will play Christmas carols, music from seasonal ballets such as The Nutcracker and classics from Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, and Ella Fitzgerald. Sandy Tanner-Smith, the shop's manager, boy, that's a British name, Sandy Tanner-Smith, said, we're confident we'll have the happiest staff and customers around. Our playlist is big enough to make sure no one hears the same Christmas song more than twice in a week. Now, Tom, have you ever worked retail?
I did. I did work retail for a little while. Worked at a GameStop.
A GameStop?
Yeah. Worked at a GameStop pushing pre-orders. And consoles and games.
Now, did you have music playing in the store?
Yeah, but around holiday, because I did it as a seasonal thing. You know, they hire a bunch of people around.
Yeah,
like usually,
around
I started.
This time.
Yeah, a little bit before Black Friday.
Yeah.
I started, and I worked through about the new, a little bit after New Year's, and they were like, "Okay, we don't need you anymore. You're 16." But I mean, there was music, but since it was kind of like, you know, it's not exactly our clientele to be playing a ton of Christmas music. They'd play a little bit of it when we got close.
Yeah.
But didn't really have to deal with a lot of it.
Well, I worked at the Jewels for 11 years. And now the kind of music that you hear in the Jewels is sort of like popular music.
Yeah, like top 40-ish.
That kind of stuff. I had, when I worked at the Jewels, we had Muzak. So it was that horrible, generic Muzak versions of songs.
Yeah, that was something. That's a term I've never really understood exactly what that means. Is that like kind of like elevator
Absolutely.
Music?
Absolutely.
But it's like the Beatles, but it's just kind of like rinky-dinky versions
yep.
of it?
Yeah. Instrumentals.
Mm-hmm.
No lyrics, all instrumentals.
And everything's played on like a jazz kit. Like, yeah.
That kind of stuff, yeah. And there's strings and lots of strings and stuff. So during the holiday season, we would get these really terrible Muzak versions of Christmas songs playing. I mean, if I worked an 8-hour shift, I was tearing my hair out by the end of the shift. But they don't do the Muzak. And does Muzak exist anymore?
I think people have kind of gotten tired of it. They're too aware of it. And just to make sure, I found a little bit of Christmas Muzak.
Yeah.
So I want to see if this is what you're talking
about. Okay, here. That's exactly what Muzak is.
Stuff you're hearing in the mall.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Sounds horrifying.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind, because there's references to it in Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, big time. And that famous song that's played during the end credits, and during the end credits of Shaun of the Dead, too, with, oh, God, how does it go? Yeah.
It also plays at the end of Robot Chicken.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I haven't watched enough Robot Chicken. But yeah, that's the closing credits of Dawn of the Dead. And I love that they played it in Shaun of the Dead too.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I mean they there are so many tributes to other zombie movies in Shaun of the Dead, you know. But anyway, yeah, so people going nuts a little bit about the Christmas songs. Well, from Esquire magazine, they have compiled the 20 crappiest Christmas songs ever recorded. And we have some examples that we're going to play and maybe drill into your head at some point. Here's the introduction, and then we'll get to this list. Every year around this time, people put aside petty differences to agree on one thing. Christmas music is almost universally unbearable. You know which one? You know what the Christmas album that I grew up with, that with me and my folks, we played, that was the number one Christmas album that was played in our house when I was a kid?
I'm going to take a shot in the dark. Was it the Phil Spector one?
No, but that's a great record.
It is a great record.
No, it was Johnny Mathis. The Johnny Mathis nice. Christmas album, and I still love it. I still love it because that hearing the Johnny Mathis Christmas album brings me right back to when I was a little kid at Christmas time. But no, the Phil Spector album is great.
That's actually great. Christmas
oh,
music.
Oh, phenomenal.
That gets a pass.
Yeah. Sure, there are many beloved classics, but for every Nat King Cole or Bing Crosby gem, there are dozens or dozens of fresh disasters arriving annually as the music industrial complex never stops its hateful assembly line of woe. While we can all quibble about what makes a Christmas song resonate, one thing a Christmas song can never be is cool. There is nothing cool about Christmas, and there never was. I don't know. That Phil Spector album's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's I think it's more often than not that it's a bad Christmas album, and then being a good Christmas album is the exception, not
yeah.
the rule.
Oh, no, that's the truth. Paradoxically, the songs that have stood the test of time come from artists who were the epitome of music cool anyway. Elvis's Blue Christmas or Wham's Last Christmas, for example, which Emilia Clarke sings beautifully at the end of the movie. Which is not a good movie, though. She's lovely, though.
Yeah, lone bright spot.
I think I don't know. Maybe I should go back and watch Game of Thrones because I think she's so charming.
Yeah,
I don't know what she plays. What does she play? Like a dragon woman?
She's Daenerys, the mother of dragons.
All right. Is she charming and lovely?
I mean, that's subjective.
But it's only after the IRL Instagram lens that we have been grandfathered into the canon. Their hip edges sanded down to the point where the songs seem like they have always existed independent of space and time. That's because Christmas is never about the present, or the presents for that matter. It's about the past. It's not this week's holiday we're looking forward to. It's the ones that have gone by. We're hoping to feel the same way we used to feel when we were younger and things were simpler. We're hoping to ignore the other 364 days of the year, and we are now consumed with the desire to be cool. And yet, the vast majority of Christmas songs are the furthest thing from a comfort blanket. So here are some of the worst. So the first one on the list here, there are 20 of them. This comes in at number 20. Pentatonix, That's Christmas to Me. Here's what it says. It takes a lot of work to sing harmonies this tight, but when the result sounds like frolicking band of cyborg carolers going door to door in the uncanny valley, it sort of defeats the purpose. The song by Pentatonix, an a cappella group made up of Gap mannequins that that come to life when the mall closes at night, has almost 18 million views on YouTube, which, judging by their lofty standards, is a disastrous failure. But considering it's the only original tune on their second album full of Christmas songs, it gets the nod here. So this is Pentatonix, That's Christmas to Me. Do we have some of that?
I'm hanging all the stockings by the Christmas tree. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me. Oh, why? 'Cause that's Christmas to me.
I listen for the third of ring walking on the roof as I fall asleep.
I feel bad because it's not like they're not talented.
No, they can sing.
They can definitely sing, but it is very homogenized. Yeah, and but people go crazy for them, though.
All right. Well, we got more. We have more. That's just the tip of the iceberg with bad Christmas songs. Which ones do you think are the crappiest? 312-981-7200.
In the magic garden, some were singing, some were dancing, while the midnight moon shone brightly overhead.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Big Ed, a little Uriah Heep.
Yeah, man, Uriah Heep. My friend Scott Oaken, one of his favorite bands.
Hey, man, they're a pretty great prog rocker.
He loves them. In any, you know... He writes Uriah Heep references into any play that he does.
Oh, God. For the five people in the audience.
The first Uriah Heep song that you played, Easy Living. I've used that in three different plays I've directed because Scott said, put Easy Living in. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's not really Christmas time yet. It's not even Thanksgiving yet. You know, I complain about this every year, and I'm really glad that a lot of stores are going to be closed on Thanksgiving. You know what I mean?
That's good. That's proper.
Because I love Thanksgiving. It's always, you know, it's just like hanging out with your family and eating. And if you're a football fan, football. And you're supposed to be with your family on Thanksgiving, and you're supposed to enjoy a nice meal and relax. I hate the fact that that's been usurped by shopping, like over the years, and we kind of skip Thanksgiving. It's like a speed bump on the way to Christmas.
Well, and the sad part is this is going to be my first Thanksgiving at home in 3 years because I started at WGN Thanksgiving night 2016, and I've worked every Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure and privilege. But this is going to be my first time sitting down for a proper Thanksgiving dinner, and I am so, so happy.
I will tell you this. I did the same thing, Tom. For years, I was Captain Fill-In. And I worked holidays. You know, when I first got the full-time gig with days off and holidays and things like that, I didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have to work on this holiday, you know? But yeah, no, I've spent a lot of time working on Christmas Eves and working on, you know, and on Thanksgiving. So it's a little bit, it is strange to actually have some days off around the holiday. But it's great. I mean, you know, it's just me and my folks. That's all. You know, I just go over to my parents' house. We eat. Sometimes, you know, my mom makes something different than, like last year she made stuffed shells, Italian stuffed shells, instead of a turkey. So we don't have to be as traditional. It's just the three of us. And we eat and we watch TV and hang out. And I don't have to rush off to work like I used to. You know, I would eat and then I'd have to take a nap because I would come in and work. So, Christmas is coming and we've already got the Christmas music. We've already got radio stations playing 24-hour Christmas songs. It started like 2 weeks ago. And we are talking about terrible Christmas songs, like really, really crappy Christmas songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Which ones do you think are terrible? 773 area code. You can talk or text us at 312-981-7200. Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is one of the worst Christmas songs ever. It was a novelty at first, but I've grown very tired of it. Of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. 708 area code says, stop the Christmas music. Let the pilgrims have their day first. I agree. I totally agree. 847 area code. My vote for the absolute worst Christmas album ever has to be Bob Dylan's Christmas album. I love Bob Dylan, but his voice and his style, as well as being Jewish, doesn't work for Christians. He converted. He's not Jewish anymore, Bob Dylan.
Yeah, it hasn't been for a while.
Yeah. It's been a long time, so he's not Jewish anymore.
Yeah, he's born again.
But yeah, his Christmas album's terrible. I mean, really terrible. Okay, now here's the next one on the list of the songs. I don't know this song. How have I not come across this song in the 54 years I've been on this planet, experiencing 53 and almost 54 Christmases?
I don't know, man.
It's by John Denver, okay? And it's called... I mean, I can't even believe this is a thing. Do people know about this song? It's called Please Daddy, Don't Get Drunk on Christmas. That's the name of the song.
It's depressing. It's really a downer.
John Denver, Please Daddy, Don't Get Drunk on Christmas. Nothing says holiday cheer like a child pleading with his emotionally abusive alcoholic father not to get crap-faced and pass out under the tree again. While that's certainly fertile and appropriate territory for a country song the rest of the year, the contrast between the subject matter and the jaunty holiday arrangement here is enough to drive you to the bottle. Okay, I got to hear some of this.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry.
Jeez.
Please, Daddy, don't get drunk this Christmas. I don't want to see my mama cry. Just last year.
Oh, my God. Okay, there it is. I'd love to hear the rest of that. So I'm gonna listen when I get off the air. I'm gonna listen to the whole thing.
It's grim.
Okay, we got a break here for the news, and then more terrible Christmas songs right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. requested the Prince.
It's coming to us from Steve.
I love that song.
It is a strange song, but I like it.
Yeah. He was capable of a lot of strange stuff, Prince.
That's putting it mildly.
I love that guy. Oh, he was great. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are live in the Skyline Studio. It's Christmas music has already started, and we're talking about some of the worst Christmas songs ever. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Roosevelt on WGN. Go ahead, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
How you doing today?
All right.
First of all, I turned on the radio when you were talking about Thanksgiving, and I was telling Tom that I tell my kids every year, and to me, it seems like every year it gets worse. What I mean by that is you have a radio station on the FM dial that started already the Christmas, I think a week or I don't know how many weeks ago.
Yeah.
And they started as soon, and this is what I noticed this year, as soon as Halloween was over, bang,
right.
Everything just exploded as
yep.
far as the commercial part of Christmas. And I tell my daughter, and I even tell my daughter, I go, I'm going to call Nick one of these days, and I'm going to tell him one of the things he should have as a subject is movies that are of Thanksgiving, and you could hardly find any of them. I think Hannah and Her Sisters is one of them.
Home for the Holidays is the best Thanksgiving movie ever made.
Yeah. Home for the Holidays,
yep.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, I think, is the one that a lot of people go to and watch on Thanksgiving. So
yeah, but as far as the commercial part of it, it is ridiculous, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I'm like you. I'm on your side as far as that, what you mentioned about Thanksgiving. You know, I really enjoy Thanksgiving because, like, everybody gets together, everybody eats, just like Christmas, except the commercial part of
right.
it.
Right, yeah. All right, now, Roosevelt. Thanks.
Well, hold on, Nick. As far as the songs, Twisted Sister and the one that Maroon 5 tried to do, the John Lennon song,
right, yeah.
War is Over.
Yeah, we'll get to that, trust me.
Yeah, and the best, and I agree with you, there are cool Christmas songs, such as, in my opinion, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, Father Christmas.
Yeah.
To me, that's a cool song, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, Roosevelt, thanks.
Thanks.
All right, see you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You don't like Home for the Holidays, right?
Is that the one with Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
No.
Okay, which one's Home for the Holidays?
It's Holly Hunter, Anne Bancroft, Charles Durning, Robert Downey Jr., Steve Guttenberg.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's good.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Jodie Foster directed it.
I'm not a big holiday movie person.
I love that movie.
There's some that I'll give it a rewatch.
You should, because it's really good. And that cast is ridiculous.
Yeah, there's no denying
that. David Strathairn is in it. He's got a beautiful scene, a heartbreaking scene with Holly Hunter.
And I will give it another shot.
It's Dylan McDermott Mulroney is in it. It's Dylan McDermott. Dylan McDermott, Mulroney.
No.
Did you ever see that sketch on SNL?
Yeah.
Dylan McDermott or Dermot Mulroney, and then Dermot Mulroney comes out. But no, Home for the Holidays is fantastic. I watch it every Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great movie.
I mean, for Christmas, I'm more for any sort of holiday stuff, I'm more inclined to watch like Life of Brian. That's my favorite Christmas movie.
That's an Easter movie.
I know, but
I showed that on Easter at my film club a few years
ago.
That's
just genius.
That's their best movie, too.
Oh, it's so funny.
All right, here's some... all right, let's do this next one, because it's Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi.
Mr. Jonathan Bon Jovi.
Backdoor Santa.
I think I saw that on the internet one time.
Like Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town, this is another in the long line of lunch pail rockers putting it on the hard hat, punching the clock at the Christmas Rock Factory. A cover of Clarence Carter's 1968 recording. It also fits squarely into the horny for Christmas canon. Aside from the truly dreadful riff that sounds like someone spilled eggnog on a Trans-Siberian Orchestra keyboard, it has little to do thematically or lyrically with Christmas. All right, here's Bon Jovi's version of Backdoor Santa, considered one of the crappiest Christmas songs of all time.
Oh,
That is awful. I would rather listen to Please Daddy Don't Get Drunk This Christmas.
Wow.
I bet Maria Vanderbilt would love it.
Oh, yeah. I'm guessing that's on the Christmas playlist every year for Vanderbilt.
608 area code says, true classic, Bob and Doug McKenzie's 12 Days of Christmas. Yes. Yes, it is. 309 area code says, I'm a faithful church attender and even fill in for the pastor sometimes. However, I am sick of Silent Night. So 773 area code says, the absolutely worst is Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time and Dominic the Donkey.
Now, hold on. Hold up there. Dominic the Donkey is a classic.
I don't even know what Dominic the Donkey is.
What do you mean? You don't know Dominic the Donkey?
I don't think so.
Hee-haw, hee-haw? You never heard that?
No, I don't think so. By the way, speaking of Christmas songs, just in a few weeks, we'll be able to hear Honky the Christmas Goose. The greatest Christmas song of all time. Honky the Christmas Goose. Yeah, well, that Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time we'll get to in a little bit. Because, in my opinion, that's the worst Christmas song ever. And I love Paul McCartney. People know how much I love Paul McCartney. Mm. That's the worst Christmas song ever. 708 area code says, retailers don't do it for their employees. They save money because so many people shop online. 301 area code says, don't forget these classics like I Farted on Santa's Lap and Don't Be a Jerk, It's Christmas. I Farted on Santa's Lap. 815 area code says, hands down, the worst Christmas song is Dominic the Donkey. Once it's in your head, you can't unhear it.
I'm not kidding. You've never heard this.
No.
Hey, jingity-jing, Dominic the Donkey, jingity-jing, the Italian Christmas Donkey, la, la, la.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Everybody knows Dominic
the Donkey. I should know it. I'm Italian.
Yeah, it's the Italian Christmas Donkey.
All right. We have next here, mentioned in this as one of the crappiest Christmas songs, is Christina Aguilera's version of Oh Holy Night. You know that one house on the block covered with every inch from foundation to chimney with garish glowing lights and animatronic Santas and reindeers running up the roof and a nativity scene to boot? This is less subtle than that. Okay. Christina Aguilera, Oh Holy Night.
Now long lay the world in sin I never pined till he appeared. The thrill and hope, the weary world rejoices.
You know, and I like Christina Aguilera. I think she's nice. I think she's done some great stuff over the years, but she's just trying way too hard here.
Oh, man.
Woof.
Okay, the next one. Is Maroon 5, which was just mentioned, Maroon 5 doing Happy Christmas, War is Over. Despite what other lesser, worst Christmas songs ever lists might tell you, the John Lennon original is unassailable. But, and this may come as a shock to you, Adam Levine and company managed to derail Lennon's composition here with a plodding arrangement and a falsetto warble that drains a song of any remnants of soul or poignancy. So here's Maroon 5's version. I've heard this before. This is unbelievable. Here we go.
Yellow and red ones, stop all the fire, yeah. Merry, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one without any fear.
That's just unforgivable. That's what that is. You know? There are many reasons to not like Adam Levine, but that might be the top reason to not like him. Yeah. God, it's so bad. It's just so bad, especially considering how great the obviously the Lennon version of that song is. But man, that's just like having screwdrivers stuck in your ear. So bad. God. Adam Levine.
But I never liked him.
I bet when they recorded it, he had his shirt off. That would be my guess. Just like at the Super Bowl, California tattoo across his torso.
What a numbskull.
Oh, he is. All right, let's take a break for the weather, and we'll come back, and we've got more Christmas songs that suck that we're going to play. 312-981-7200.
In France, a skinny man died of a big disease with a little name. By chance, his girlfriend came across a needle, and soon she did the same. At home, there was...
Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. That's my favorite Prince album, Sign of the Times. And the movie's great.
Isn't that like a triple?
Yeah.
Sign of the Times?
Yeah.
It's a feat.
Well, he's Prince.
I'm going to Minnesota next month.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, my girlfriend asked me, she's like, well, is there anything you want to do in Minnesota while we're there? And I was like, yeah, we're going to go to Prince's house.
Yeah.
Got to pay respects. I'm going to bring flowers.
Yeah, you're going there at a really nice time of year for the weather.
It's this Christmas thing with her side of the family. I don't know. We were just going to go to Iowa. And then all of a sudden this idea came up. Yeah, let's go to Minnesota. We haven't been to Minnesota in a while.
Have you been to the Mall of America?
I have not. So I'm going to go walk in the footsteps of many before and experience the fresh hell that is.
It is the most terrifying place on earth.
I've told her that story about you going there and seeing Seven and everything. She's like, I don't know what's wrong with him. I know.
It's It's mortifying, that place. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hey, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve Grzanich is coming up at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we're going through really terrible Christmas songs. What do you guys think? 301 area code says they should play that version of O Holy Night to torture prisoners. Christina Aguilera. 773 area code says, my poor ears, yikes. I'm assuming... referencing Christina Aguilera?
Could be Christina.
Any of the ones that we played.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's the War Is Over. That Maroon 5 cover,
that's horrific. Ern says, Nick, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer is by far the worst. Okay. Now, so the next one is by a band called Duck the Halls. Duck the Halls, and the song is called Santa Looked a Lot Like Daddy.
Well, you know who these guys are. It's the it's the Duck people, the Duck Dynasty guys.
Oh, is that who it is?
Yeah.
Okay, and it says, and it just the description says, we had a good run, culturally speaking. All right, well, let's hear this.
Well, Santa looked a lot like Daddy. Well, Daddy looked a lot like him. Not the way I had him pictured. Santa was a masseuse-in. He didn't come down the chimney, so Mama must have let him in. Santa looked a lot like Daddy, or Daddy looked a lot like him.
I don't think that's terrible. Is that a kid?
Yeah.
I don't watch Duck Dynasty, so I just know they have beards. That's the only thing I know.
I don't know. I wouldn't say that's necessarily the worst, but
it's not as bad as the Maroon 5.
Yeah. I'll give them props for that steel guitar. That's some pretty good steel guitar in there.
Yeah, it seems like a... Yeah.
It's just cheesy as hell.
I always found I Caught Mommy Kissing Santa Claus to be a disturbing song.
Well, because I never caught on to the fact that, oh, yeah, because Santa Claus is
dad.
Is dad, but yeah. I always thought, like, oh, my God, she's cheating.
That's exactly
dad.
Right.
That's horrible.
Yeah, he's exactly right. And there's also, I don't like it's Baby It's Cold Outside. Very date rapey song.
Yeah. Apparently.
Hey, no, you're not leaving. Have another drink. No, but I really want to go. No. You can't leave. Have another drink.
Yeah.
At least always thought that song was creepy.
I never got either of them.
Yeah. The band is called New Song, and the song is called The Christmas Shoes, as the next bad one. New Song isn't just this Christian rock band's name. It's also something they probably want to pull to put on their to-do schedule. This one is another maudlin, manipulative tearjerker about a young boy who's watching his mother on her deathbed. Oh. He wants to buy his mom a new pair of shoes for when she meets Jesus tonight. And he just wants her to look her best. I think it's getting a little dusty in here, this one. This is the most loving thing I've ever heard. I take it all back. Oh, man. All right. Well, let's hear this happy one.
Not really in the Christmas mood. Standing right in front of me was a little boy waiting anxiously, pacing round like little boys do. And in his hands he held a pair of shoes. And his clothes were worn and old. He was dirty from head to toe. And when it came his time to pay, I couldn't believe what I heard him say.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. That is just, oh, man. Who would want to listen to that?
I don't know.
Don't we want to be happy at Christmas? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to love one another and be happy at Christmas, not listen to some song about a kid who's dirty, his mom's dying, and he wants to give her a pair of shoes? What is that?
Welcome to the bleak reality that is Christmas.
God. Do you watch? You don't like Christmas movies, right?
There's a few that I enjoy here and there, but it's not like a thing for me.
Yeah, I watch Black Christmas, the original Black Christmas. Every
year. I'd watch that. I'd watch Die Hard.
I watch Die Hard.
People
and Die
really...
Hard 2. And Die Hard 2, because Die Hard 2, which is I think better than the first one. I'm the only person because Rennie Harlan directed it, so I'm legally
the crazy
obliged.
The Finnish guy.
That's right, with the fantastic head of hair. That's a Christmas movie because it takes place on Christmas as well. But yeah, there are some Christmas movies that are great. I watch The Ice Harvest every year. That's another one that I watch every year. The Ice Harvest with Billy Bob Thornton and John Cusack. I love that movie, directed by the late great Harold Ramis. A tremendously underrated movie. If you've never seen The Ice Harvest, you should watch it. It is a really, really great movie. Connie Nielsen and Randy Quaid are in it. Yeah, that's one of those movies that completely tanked at the box office. Nobody went to see The Ice Harvest when it came out. It's a very dark movie, a very, very twisted, dark black comedy. And I love it. So that's something that I watch every Christmas. All right, we've got more terrible Christmas songs here that we want to get to. And if you guys want to jump in on the conversation with some of the terrible Christmas songs that you've ever heard or that you were forced to listen to, you can text us or call us at 312-981-7200. Text us or call us at 312-981-7200. You've seen The Ice Harvest, right?
Yeah. No, The Ice Harvest is good.
I watch it every year. I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
And I've got to watch Jingle All the Way.
Oh, God. No. No Jingle All the Way.
An amazing performance from Arnie.
Oh, God. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then after the news, we'll continue with terrible Christmas songs. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Not the first time that we'll hear Paul McCartney this morning. I love the video for this song because it's just like a bunch of Paul McCartneys and one of them, he's doing the guy from Sparks.
Yeah.
Who requested the McCartney?
That's coming to us from the 773.
Okay, 773. There you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Skyline studio on WGN. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. Two for Tuesday. All right. Christmas songs is what we're talking about, particularly terrible ones, terrible Christmas songs. Before the break, we played a little bit of one of the most depressing things I've ever heard in my life called The Christmas Shoes, which is a song about a kid watching his mom die, and he wants to get her a new pair of shoes so she looks good when she meets Jesus. This is the kind of uplifting, happy Christmas song that we all want to hear during the holiday season. And then during the break, Tom told me that indeed they made a TV movie out of it with Rob Lowe. Called The Christmas Shoes. I looked it up on IMDb. Here's the description. Here's the plot. This sounds like a movie that you can't miss. This is one of those must watch annually Christmas movies. So it's Rob Lowe and Kimberly Williams from Father of the Bride, and from Chicago. The Christmas Shoes. Here it is. Describe this to someone who wants to watch a nice holiday movie. Here it is. A young boy tries to get a pair of shoes for his dying mother while a lawyer tries to deal with the breakup of his marriage.
Great stuff for the whole family. Really great stuff. It warms your heart. Gets you in the spirit. I'm feeling cheery already.
A young boy tries to get a pair of Christmas shoes for his dying mother while a lawyer tries to deal with the breakup of his marriage. There you go. Hey, pop that one in, man. That'll get us into the Yuletide spirit. Bust out the eggnog and let's watch this movie.
That's a trope I notice a lot in movies. It's always a lawyer that needs to learn a lesson. They always got to learn something about family. I know plenty of nice
this
lawyers.
Is it made for TV? I'm assuming it was probably on one of the, you know, like Hallmark Channel or Lifetime or whatever. But yeah, from 2002, it aired in December of 2002. Exactly the kind of uplifting, lovely holiday sentiment that we all could use. All right, let's go to the next terrible song. Joel Gray has made the list. Here's the name of the song. Are you ready for this? It's a very long title. This one has a very long title. Joel Gray makes the list of worst Christmas songs with, I'm going to put some glue round the Christmas tree so Santa will stick around all year.
What?
I'm going to put some glue round the Christmas tree so Santa Claus will stick around all year. This is a song about a budding serial killer and torturer devising an elaborate saw-like trap for Santa Claus. Who he plans to hold captive for the entire year. Creepy enough before you get the fact that Gray was a grown man singing in the voice of a little boy by the time he recorded this one. Oh, no. All right, let's hear a little bit of this one.
I'm gonna put some glue round the Christmas tree so Santa Claus will stick around all year. I'll spread it on the floor, the windows and the door. I'll catch him like a fly, and I'll have him for Easter and the 4th of July. And every day.
This is terrifying.
Will be Christmas.
Sounds like he's gonna eat him.
This is terrifying.
With choo-choo trains and rocket ships to steer. I'll make it all come true with just a little glue, and Santa Claus will stick around all year.
That is terrifying. And the fact that that's Joel Gray is even creepier. They're right about the voice. That's Joel Gray. Wow, that's just scary.
We should get a group of kids to all just sing that as monotone as possible. Scare the hell out of you.
Like, they get the Shining Twins.
Come play with us, Santa.
Yeah, forever and ever. I'm going to put some glue around the Christmas tree so Santa Claus will stick around all year. Okay. Next up, Iggy Pop's version of White Christmas. In theory, this is supposed to coast by on the irony of a guy like Iggy Pop singing a delightful Christmas classic, but it's such a half-baked slapdash arrangement, with Pop seeming like he recorded his vocal from inside a stocking, that it comes across as almost macabre, but not in a good way. So here's Iggy Pop doing White Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where the treetops glisten and children listen, sleigh bells in the snow.
I actually kind of like it.
I don't mind that. But much like the Adam Levine song, also probably recorded without a shirt on.
Yeah, well, of course.
Ziggy Pop. I don't think he wears shirts anymore.
Never. That's just really, that's pretty special.
Very unsettling. Just wait for Tom Waits doing, you know, Oh Tenenbaum.
Oh, Iggy. You gotta love Iggy Pop, man.
That guy has survived literally everything.
Oh, man.
Short of a nuclear war.
And all of it with no shirt. Wow. White Christmas by Iggy Pop. That was pretty special. That'll get everybody in the the Christmas mood. Put that on right before you watch The Christmas Shoes with Rob Lowe. Remember? Listen to that one, because you're going to watch a movie about a young boy who tries to get a pair of Christmas shoes for his dying mother while a lawyer tries to deal with the breakup of his marriage. You know, Christmassy stuff. What? Oh, man. All right. There's more here. There's more terrible songs to listen to here. There have been a lot of really bad Christmas songs. We're discovering many of them this morning and listening to some of them. And some of them become bad Christmas movies with Rob Lowe. Okay. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us with your thoughts on terrible Christmas songs. We'll listen to some more of these that are featured in this article. Yes, from Esquire.com. The 20 crappiest Christmas songs ever recorded, although they didn't use the word crap. I'm still creeped out by Joel Grey. I don't even know what to say about the "I'm going to kill Santa."
I'm going to trap him with glue.
It's like Kevin's John Doe from Seven wrote that song.
What's in the box? What's in the box, Santa?
I'm going to force him to eat spaghetti till he explodes. All right, let's take a break here for some weather.
Someone knocking at the door. Somebody ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door. Somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor. Open the door.
Ooh, yeah. Welcome back. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, 2 for Tuesday. That wraps up the 2 for of Paul McCartney. Let him in. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We've been listening to and talking about some of the worst Christmas songs of all time. I still can't get the nightmare of the Joel Grey song out of my head. I'm going to put some glue around the Christmas tree so Santa Claus will stick around all year. still the most terrifying, one of the most terrifying things I've ever heard. Do you guys have any terrible Christmas songs that you've known? 312-981-7200. Here's Rick on WGN. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
The Christmas Mouse happens to be one of the worst Christmas songs ever.
The Christmas Mouse.
The Christmas Mouse. I first heard it quite a few years ago. Another station on the FM side played it, and ever since then, it's been stuck. It's been a nightmare in my brain ever this holiday season.
Do you know who
Hopefully,
did it? Do you know who?
No, I don't know who did it, but if you YouTube it, it pops right up, and it is just god-awful horrible.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Rick.
All right. Take care.
Let's try the Christmas. Can we find the Christmas Mouse?
Escape, he heard the sound of little hooves. It was Santa's little reindeer prancing on the roof. Down the chimney, Santa came and stood before the mouse and asked him if he was the owner of the house. The mouse was very pleased and held himself up tall, said, I am the little mouse who lives inside the wall. And I scurry round by night looking for a bite.
Oh, man.
Who's credited?
Oof. Oh, God. Let's see. It appears to be an old man, but that goes by Eric Traplin.
Eric Traplin?
Yeah.
Traplin, responsible for the Christmas Mouse.
Or as my dad used to say, the Christmas Moose.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. Anybody else want to jump in with this? 312-981-7200. All right, next one is Set It Off. Who's Set It Off? Are they a punk band?
I guess they seem to be one of those mid-2000s bands.
Like
that
a Blink 182-ish?
Yeah,
kind of
but
thing.
Worse. Sold a lot of Hot Topic merchandise.
Set It Off is the band, and the song is called This Christmas, I'll Burn It to the Ground. What is
a bunch of angry young men here.
This song is called This Christmas, I'll Burn It to the Ground. This comes from one of those ubiquitous punk goes albums in which contemporary pop, punk, emo, and metal bands are tasked with stunt covers, but surprisingly, the bulk of the album is pretty good. This one, on the other hand, is a cavalcade of raving carnival barker theatrical horrorcore that comes off as both a parody of the scene and the idea of Christmas itself. All right, so This Christmas, I'll Burn It to the Ground. It sounds like a perennial Hollywood holiday favorite. Let's hear a little bit of this. Oh, my God.
Wow. This Christmas, Santa's skipping town? Wow.
Oh, man.
These are the kind of guys that hang out in malls.
I've never heard of Set It Off. Wait, it's such a stupid name for a band, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, man, we're Set It Off. Wasn't that a Queen Latifah movie?
Set It Off? Set It Up, maybe?
No, it was like a bunch of African American women rob a bank. It was like from the early 2000s or something.
Yeah, no, you're totally right.
And it's directed by F. Gary Gray.
Yeah, Jada Pinkett's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Vivica A. Fox.
It's actually good.
Yeah, 96.
Oh, from that wow, that long ago.
Yeah. And Queen Latifah's looking mean in it, too.
Oh, it's actually good.
Yeah, that
it's
looks pretty good.
Yeah, good action movie. Set It Off. Maybe that's where this band got their inspiration for their name. From a Queen Latifah heist movie. Now, that movie made money. Why didn't anybody see Widows? I don't understand. Set It Off made all kinds of money back in 1996. Widows didn't do anything. And Widows is a better movie. Actually, a much better movie. I like Set It Off, but Widows is, like, terrific. You know, I don't understand. I'm still disappointed by the fact that nobody saw Widows.
It's super good.
I don't even understand it. So, all right. More terrible Christmas songs that we're going through here. Having some fun listening to these terrible songs. Here's Louise on WGN. Hi, Louise.
Hey, hi, Nick. Hi. How are you doing?
All right. What's up?
I was mentioning a song. It's called Something Stuck Up in the Chimney, and I don't know what it is, but it's been there all year long.
It's
and it was on a CD called Twisted Christmas, and it really kind of implies that Santa was just
Santa's
coming
dead
down the chimney and
yeah, he's dead.
Didn't make it down.
Yeah. Something Stuck Up in the Chimney is the name of the song?
Yeah.
Let's see if we can. Let's, all right. Thanks, Louise.
Okay, bye-bye.
Can you find that one, Tom?
There's something stuck up in the chimney, and I don't know what it is, but it's been there all night long. Well, I waited up for Santa all Christmas night, but he never came, and it don't seem right that there's something in the chimney, and it doesn't make a sound, but I wish you a Merry Christmas.
What?
Woo. More creepy. Woo. More creepy kids for Christmas.
Oh.
So basically, Santa, the corpse of Santa is stuck in this kid's chimney. Oh, man. And that's, I wonder what the rest of the CD was, because she said it was called Twisted Christmas. But yeah, oh, that's funny. Yeah, I wonder what's in the chimney. Nothing. It's just a corpse. Santa's rotting in your chimney right now. Don't start a fire either.
Oh, get this. I've got some of the track title
of Twisted Christmas.
Yeah. So you've got We Wish You Weren't Living With Us, which is a parody of Wish You a Merry Christmas about relatives who overstay their welcome. Wreck the Malls. About excessive Christmas shopping, and A Visit from St. Nicholson, a parody of A Visit from St. Nicholas by Clement Clark Moore, with actor Jack Nicholson satirizing his frequent appearances at Los Angeles Lakers games.
What?
And his movie roles portraying disturbed maniacs. It's not actually Jack Nicholson.
Oh, okay. I was going to say somebody doing a Jack Nicholson impersonation.
Yeah, it's Bob Rivers impersonating Jack
Bob
Nicholson.
Bob Rivers impersonating. None of that makes sense. None of that. I don't understand any of those words that you just said that you put together somehow into a sentence. I don't.
Truly bizarre.
Oh, man. All right. Well, it there's more to come here. Some very bad songs, and we're going to talk about them and play some of them too. And it's 312-981-7200 if you want to jump into us. 312-981-7200. So we'll get more of it after the news.
I want a man with a slow hand. I want a lover with an easy touch. I want somebody who will spend some time, not come and go in a heated rush. I want somebody.
Oh, man, welcome back. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, wrapping up 2 for Tuesday. You made 2 for Tuesday. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Mike, Little Pointer Sisters.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back, everyone. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich is up after this at 5 with the opening bell. And Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive, as we do every weekday morning right here on WGN. We're talking about really bad Christmas songs, and there seem to be a lot of them. And we're getting a bunch of texts, and if you want to call in or text us with your thoughts on some really terrible Christmas songs, 312-981-7200. It's that time of year when you listen to terrible Christmas songs. 312-981-7200. Here's some texts. 847 area code says, one of the worst is Lady Gaga's remake of White Christmas. She decided the original was too short, so she made up her own version of words, also changing the melody some. I don't think I've heard that.
Yeah, well, actually, we'll get to that one.
Yeah.
That's coming up.
Yeah. Okay. 219 area code was Jeff in Hammond says, the worst Christmas song is The Yabs singing Silver Bells. I don't even know what that is. 815 area code says the Christmas Shoes song spawned a crappy Hallmark movie. Yeah, we discovered that. That happy Hallmark movie with Rob Lowe. 708 area code, Barbara Streisand's Jingle Bells. Ugh. Yeah.
That is a shockingly bad.
Well, the arrangement is the weird thing.
Yeah. Jingle Bells. Yeah. She's on coke.
Yeah. No, the arrangement is nuts. The arrangement of her version of Jingle Bells is certifiable. 815 area code says, what about King Diamond's No Presents for Christmas? It's a classic. King Diamond, man. Can't deny King Diamond. King Diamond does a version of No Christmas or No Presents for Christmas. That sounds lovely. King Diamond was what? Merciful Fate, right?
Yeah, that's him.
He was the lead singer of Merciful Fate.
Yeah, he did all face paint.
Yeah, and then he went solo.
Yeah, and he had that one song, like Welcome Home or something. You know, let me help you out of your chair, Grandma.
Yeah. Yeah. People like the King Diamond.
I don't mind a little King Diamond here and there.
Okay. Here's the next one. Now, people love this. This is on the in the article, the list of the crappiest Christmas songs ever recorded. People love this one, though. Bruce Springsteen's version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
I like it. I think it's fine.
I had an ex-girlfriend who just, that was her favorite Christmas version of any song ever.
Yeah?
Yeah. And she wasn't really even a Bruce Springsteen fan. For some reason, she just
really loved the boss doing a little Christmas.
Since it was written back in the 30s, this classic has been recorded by everyone from Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra to Miley Cyrus. But this sweaty dad ripping a hole in the ass pocket of his Levi groaner. That's somehow become ubiquitous in recent years. Some artists have the ability to lose themselves in a cover, elevating the original to heretofore unheard heights, like others, while others, like Springsteen, manage to make everything they do sound like the same hokey bar band shtick over and over and over again. You're still laughing at the description of the song?
Yeah, sorry. No, that was
the
good.
Sweaty dad ripping a hole in the ass pocket of his Levi's groaner. That's how they describe Bruce Springsteen's version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. We hear a little bit of this, although we've all heard this like 1,000 times.
He's making a list, he's checking it twice. Wanna find out who's naughty or nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
I think they're being way too harsh.
Yeah, well, I think in this particular live version, he's kind of laying on the folksiness a little thick.
Yeah.
Like, his pronunciation is totally off from how he actually talks. And he's wearing like a Santa 10-gallon hat.
Mm.
But I think it's a good version.
Well,
I really
listen,
do.
You know, at this point, it's become, like they said, ubiquitous. This is when you hear Christmas... Christmas songs on the radio. They play it all the time. It's in heavy rotation. I don't hate it. I think it's fine. It's fine.
Like any song, if you hear it enough, it gets tiresome.
Yeah. She and Him, Baby, It's Cold Outside. Now, this is
Zoe Deschanel.
Zoe Deschanel and the dude?
Yeah.
In our current era of wokeness, this is, in all likelihood, the most problematic Christmas song ever. Nothing sets the Christmas mood quite so readily as a protracted date rape in action. And yet, somehow, we're still treated to a new recording of this song every year. There are many to choose from, but you won't do much worse than She and Him, which inverts the gender dynamics for the sake of being playful, which, you know, completely undermines the point of inverting the gender dynamics. I don't know if I've heard. I like Zoe Deschanel though. I mean, I like her very much in movies and on TV and stuff, but I also think she's a fun singer. Okay, let's hear it.
I really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The evening has been
hoping that you drop in.
So very nice.
I'll hold your hands there just like
my mother will start to worry.
Beautiful.
Father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to the fireplace.
So really, I'd better skirt.
Beautiful, please, honor me.
maybe just to have a drink more.
Put some records on while I go.
Labels might be.
Maybe it's bad out there.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, just it's never inspired.
Oh. Yeah, you know. That's bad.
And she is a good singer. I think she's done...
Yeah.
I think they've done other Christmas songs that do come off a little bit better, but it's just kind of uninspired. Not really anything new.
Yeah. Jeez, this next one.
Don't make me, please.
Oh, man. Well, I think we're going to skip this one. This is what Tiny Tim recorded a record in 1980. But we're not going to play it, but here's the title. This is the title, and this is not a joke. Tiny Tim has a record that he recorded in 1980. Didn't get released for 10 years, I think for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
Santa Claus has got the AIDS. What it?
He had to be off the deep end by that point.
Santa Claus has got the AIDS. I don't understand.
This is just grim.
All right. Okay, here's the next one. The Killers. Don't shoot me, Santa. Never mind the subject matter. A murderous boy pleads with Santa not to shoot him. This 2007 song would be harrowing enough for the jerky time changes and the psychopath-level spoken word sections. All right. Don't Shoot Me, Santa by The Killers.
Oh, Santa. I've been waiting on you.
That's funny, kid, because I've been coming for you.
Oh, Santa, I've been killing just for fun.
Well, the party's over, kid, because I got a bullet in my gun.
A bullet in your what?
What the hell is going on? What is that?
I don't know. I wish you could see the music video for this. There's like a puppet show.
Mm-hmm.
Santa is like an old dirty hipster.
And it's a it's puppets?
Yeah.
So like the kid is a puppet and Santa's a puppet?
Yeah, until Santa pops out and he's the one controlling the puppets. And he's like this red-bearded nightmare man. It just, I don't know.
That's nuts.
Yeah, they did that every year for a while, The Killers. They would put out a Christmas single every year.
Of an original?
Yeah, of an original Christmas song. Other ones were good. This one was just always bizarre.
2007. All right, now the next one is, I love this next song. I love it. I don't understand what the problem is here. The next song on the list is Band-Aid with Do They Know It's Christmas. I love that song. Considering how Ethiopia has been a Christian nation for something like 1,500 years, and a majority of the population identified as such when this benefit song came out in 1984, it's safe to say that they do, in fact, know. As much as it pains me to say anything critical of Phil Collins and Duran Duran, this track is an example of how nostalgia is dangerous. I love this song. Play a little bit. I love this song.
And there will be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life.
I love this song. I don't care.
I just, there are certain parts of it that I think are kind of weird.
Well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there won't be snow in Africa this year.
Yeah.
Come on. Who wrote that? I bet it was Bono.
Bob Geldof wrote it.
Oh, he wrote the whole song?
Yes.
He's so much better than that. Come on, Bobby. Maybe Bono can be like, oh, yeah, just put that line in there. And Bob.
No, and it's also, I it's, it, I have a soft spot in my heart for that, because that's like full on 80s, and I was like I was like 19 when that song came out, or 20.
Well, there was quite a bit of financial benefit. As
it made a lot of money.
It was a charity single, so it's kind of above criticism
absolutely.
On that level.
Now, We Are the World is a terrible song. That's a terrible song, but it made money for a lot of for people that needed it, and it also this song basically spawned, like, 6 months later, Live Aid happened.
That's true.
So. I like, and I just have a kind of an attachment to it. That song, I really like that song.
But as someone who's been in the UK multiple times for Christmas time, they won't stop.
Yeah.
It just plays nonstop.
Yeah. And it's so 80s, especially the video. When you watch the video, it's so 80s.
Yeah. Well, it's all of them singing in a studio, and then a bunch of guys sitting with pencils like, this is going to be it. This is going to be
fantastic. All right. Let's take a break, and we'll wrap everything up here with some more of the worst Christmas songs of all time. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Yeah, and Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Okay, we're wrapping it up here with more terrible Christmas songs, 312-981-7200. The next one is Justin Bieber with Mistletoe. Jingle bells, a jaunty island vibe, and Bieber pledging to be under the mistletoe with his shorty. What could go wrong? All right, let's hear this.
Everyone's gathering around the fire. Chestnuts roasting like a hot July. I should be chilling with my folks, I know. I'ma be under the mistletoe. Word on the street, Santa's coming at night. Reindeer's flying through the sky so high.
Oh my God. I'm a bee under the mistletoe.
Yeah, nothing says Christmas like a nice reggae beat.
God, that's terrible. All right. Next one is Pussycat Dolls. I've heard this one. Pussycat Dolls, Santa Baby. While it's hard to find much fault in the Eartha Kitt original, if there's one thing this already thirsty song needed to push it over the edge, it was about 5,000% less subtlety and a few stripper poles and Carmen Electra gyrating in thigh-high stockings to sell the spirit of the holiday season. So here's the Pussycat Dolls with Santa Baby.
Santa Baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good.
Uh-huh. Now, I approve of the Madonna version. Well, that's because I approve of 99% of what Madonna does. All right, how about this one? The Jackson 5, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus is next. The idea of a 5-year-old Michael Jackson singing this one only heightens the weirdness level. There's nothing like Christmas quite like the thought of a voyeuristic child watching his father get cuckolded by a man who snuck into your house in the middle of the night. I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus by the Jackson 5.
I saw mommy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. She didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peek.
See, the thing is, this isn't bad. You know what I mean? but it's just a creepy song. Yeah. you know what I mean? But that arrangement is nice. You know, Michael Jackson had, had a beautiful, beautiful voice. The arrangement was cool. But it's just a weird song.
Yeah, and to everybody, we know that it's a joke that Santa Claus is your dad, but it's still, the thought is weird.
It is weird. All right, this one was mentioned earlier, Lady Gaga with Christmas Tree. Hear me out. What if we jammed as many iconic Christmas melodies as possible into one bloodless slog of an undanceable dance track in which Lady Gaga alludes to her vagina? Okay. Well, let's listen to a little of this. This is Lady Gaga.
Yeah, you're not gonna like this.
Light me up, put me on top. Let's la 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 la. Light me up, put me on top. Let's la 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 la. The only place you'll wanna be is underneath my Christmas tree. The only place you'll wanna be is underneath my Christmas tree. Light me up, put me on top.
Okay, that's horrendous.
Yeah, that's weirder than the meat dress.
That's horrendous. You know, it's amazing that I loved her so much in A Star Is Born. I've never been a fan. I've always thought, I never, never, ever, at any time was I a fan of Lady Gaga. But I thought she was great in A Star Is Born, and I loved the songs. But that's just proof of why I didn't like her until that movie came out.
that was a choice. That was a choice on her part.
But she's great in the movie, man. I love her in that movie. I think she's fantastic in it. Be the first to admit, never been a fan, but she won me over completely. And I love the music in that movie. Okay, so here it is. Number one on the list of the crappiest Christmas songs ever recorded. I could not agree more. This is the worst Christmas song of all time. Paul McCartney, Wonderful Christmas Time. Worst Christmas song ever. This is the Beatles of terrible Christmas songs. It's a love song between a middle-aged man and the new Casio keyboard that he got in his stocking. A song whose awesome black hole of musicality is almost powerful enough to suck the life out of everything Paul McCartney did before. All right, here it is, the worst Christmas song of all time.
The mood is right, the spirit's up. We're here tonight, and that's enough. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time. Simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
The worst Christmas song of all time.
I'll admit, I kind of like it.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
The worst Christmas song of all time by one of the greatest artists in the history of music. All right. Well, there you go. Terrible Christmas songs. Happy Christmas. We'll be back tomorrow for Wildcard Wednesday. Rick Geezer and sports songs for Odd Sports. And we'll talk about the screening of The Right Stuff, which is coming up, too.